WWNR Beckley. The opinions expressed during this program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or advertisers of News Talk 620 WWNR.
Tonight, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the 20,000 members of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, they're working for you. Now, Bob Kincaid. Well, I guess it's still the night.
Hey, good evening. Almost 6 minutes after 7 o'clock. It's finally Monday. Oh, Lord. I tell you what, the weekend's, well, again, it's another one of those Mark Twain moments from the Diary of Adam and Eve. Sunday pulled through. It is Monday, and I am glad to be back with you. I missed you guys over the weekend. I trust some of you watched the Mountaineers try to battle it out against Syracuse on Saturday night, and a game effort they certainly put up. And they did make the big dance playing Creighton this week in the first round. And I think that was deliberate, too, just sort of segueing out of the sports club here, because both teams are highly effective at shooting the three. So it should make for a pretty interesting game. Beyond that, well, what else is there? There's all kinds of stuff. You can sort of take a run at it if you wish. Most anything that might be on your mind. As for mine, yeah, my thoughts. Interesting, great moments in the conservative lifestyle out there. This out of Waukesha County, Wisconsin. That poor Michael Savage Wiener thinks that liberalism is a mental disorder. He's got the wrong group. Disgruntled church member, highly conservative, of a cult-like church, and now don't blame me, even other people are saying that as well, walked into his church and blew away 7 parishioners. I mean, what can you say? You know, was this some liberal? Hardly. We're not the kill them all and guts, let God sort them out people, that these deadly religious fanatics, religion industry adherents are. So we got that. And then out of the opinion page 4A of the local fish wrap, we've got yet another lovely example of people who hate for workers to make a decent wage. Never going to understand these people unless, well, maybe I do. Mr. Mike Mitchell of M&M Uptown Development writing into the paper today, convinced that if we just pay the workers less, everything will be sunshine and roses. How wrong-headed. Of course, you know, when you hear these greed heads say this, they talk about your tax dollars and they talk about saving your tax money. Do you think they want to give you the money back? Honestly, do you think that they do? Because they don't. Any money that gets saved from listen to how they frame the debate. Getting suckered into their language again. But their argument goes that if they can just keep from paying workers money, that it will save the taxpayers money. But if you sit down and you think about that for a few minutes, you realize that people like this Mike Mitchell in the rag-hole old today, you realize that he's lying to you. Because there will be no savings. The money they don't pay the workers will go into the developer's pocket. Because they are greedy people. They don't seem to understand in their greed that when working people make a decent living, that they turn around and pour it back into the local economy. Now, that seems fairly simple to comprehend for me. I don't know about you. And I guess I'm just being a liberal again. When you pay people a decent wage, they in turn make the community you live in better. How difficult is that to comprehend? It's apparently like it's on something of the order of string theory or quantum physics for Mr. Mike Mitchell of M&M Uptown Development.
M&M Uptown Development. If only we can pay the workers a little bit less, I can be more rich. Yay for me.
It's attack. What gets into... Is this like something out of Star Trek? Captain, it was terrible. They put things in our ears. You know, has this guy got something that gnawing around inside his brain that makes him think this way? That if only you can screw the workers, everything's going to be good? Who does he think lives here? Is this some... Is Beckley... am I missing it? Is this some sort of gated community? Where the rich thrive and everyone is happy because the little peasant working people aren't making a deal. You know, what's the minimum wage right now? $5.15 an hour. Give this guy a chance. He'll tell you that it shouldn't be raised. That's the minimum wage, $5.15 an hour, not prevailing wage. But, you know, that's just too tall a mountain to ask Mike Mitchell to climb. You know, what does he write? If labor costs were able to be competitively bid out, it could easily save 15 to 20% over the entire project. Save it? Save it where? Where's it going to go? It's not going to build another school. It's not going to build another bridge. It's not going to build another public project. It might, however, build an in-the-ground swimming pool for somebody like Mike Mitchell. Because the tax savings will not come back to you, Sunshine. No, no, no. They will not come back to the taxpayer. That's not how it works in Greedland. You know, so for my part, I say, you know, pay the workers a decent wage. Non-union and union alike. Because, remember, prevailing wage applies to both. How hard is that to figure out? Pay the prevailing wage. Help people have the money that they need to put braces on their children's teeth. Help them be able to buy the new TV. Help them to be able to go out and eat in a restaurant once a month. Twice a month, maybe. Or go and do something fun around here if you don't have time to go on vacation. That money all pours back into the local economy. It doesn't pour back into the local economy if Mike Mitchell and his pals get to put it in their pockets. There's a big difference. You know, 500 people pouring money into the local economy is a lot more effective than, you know, Mike Mitchell maybe, you know, what, buying a fancy new car or digging a swimming pool or, you know, stuffing it in the 401k. Who knows, the IRA. Again, is it, what you see in this, you know, how little does this guy want people to work for? And that's, you know, it's local here, but it is a national issue. How low do the Republicans want the workers to work for? How little money? Are they trying to get working people into a bidding war with the illegal workers from offshore? From outside the continental United States? What is the ultimate goal of these people? I mean, I think I know. They're not going to be happy until there is no middle class. The middle class is utterly dead and gone and buried. And there's a lower class and an upper class. And at that point, it does become, honest to God, feudalism. I mean, the snobbery involved with, is it really necessary to pay the construction janitor more money than the teachers who will be working after the construction is complete? This guy despises working people. And I'll be honest with you, the feeling is mutual. Anybody who doesn't believe that the working class deserves the right to attempt to have a decent life, I got nothing for. I don't know about you, but I don't. Is it really necessary to pay the construction worker janitor? Do, dearie, bring me another lox vomit canopy. This guy's disgusting. Yeah, he talks about one wage being set at $24.50 an hour in wages and fringe benefits. He forgets to mention that, you know, the union guy who does that doesn't get the whole $24.50. he doesn't bother to mention that the union guy who makes the $31.75 an hour doesn't get the $31.75 an hour, because a lot of that is tied up in his health care and his retirement. Because, see, in organized labor, we've still got this goofy idea that people who work for a living should be able to retire at some point with some degree of dignity, and hence the, you know, hence the pension. Or that he, that working man, that working woman, should not be compelled to worry for the very existence of their children when they get sick. That they should be able to go to the doctor. That if the child needs an operation, the child should be able to have an operation. But that's liberal of me, isn't it? Disgusting. So we got that. We got a lot more. More details that have come out about about Brian Nichols, the guy who was the courthouse shooter down in Atlanta. And I've followed a lot of it over the weekend, and you know what? I'm still correct. The bottom line, no guns in that building, no murder in that building. It's that simple. But there is an abundance of things to talk about this evening. The phone number, of course, is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. You can email to wwnr@netphase.net or bob@headonradio.com. You can go to headonradio.com, jump in on the message boards. It's been zany! And, of course, we stream live for you every night on the Internet at wwnrnewstalk620.com. We do it, and we do it all for you. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head On. Trinity Christian Academy is dedicated to educating the whole child. Trinity Christian Academy has loving, caring teachers who are trained to challenge students to attain academic excellence. With pre-K through 8th grade in a great new facility on Pinewood Drive in Beckley, Trinity Christian Academy is a great place for your child. Call today for information at 254-9600. Trinity Christian Academy, 224 Pinewood Drive, just above the Bank of Mount Hope in Beckley. Call Trinity Christian Academy today at 254-9600.
How tough are you? West Virginia Sports Promotions presents the 26th Annual Southern West Virginia Budweiser Original Tough Man Contest, as seen on TV. This exciting event is being co-sponsored by 84 Lumber, Hometown Subaru, and Charter Media. It's coming April 1st and 2nd to Beckley's Raleigh County Armory. Up to $5,000 in prize money and Tough Man jackets to be awarded, plus an opportunity to advance to the World Championships and fight on national TV. No entry fee. Divisions for men and women. To sign up, you must be 18 or older, an area resident, no pro fights, and limited amateur experience. Just tough local guys and gals. If you think you're tough enough, call 1-800-296-3897. That's 1-800-296-3897. It's the 26th Annual Southern West Virginia Budweiser Original Tough Man Contest, as seen on TV. Coming April 1st and 2nd to Beckley's Raleigh County Armory. Tickets go on sale March 12th. Tough men, tough women, and ring girls, sign up now. Whips need not apply.
He's got a brain, and he's not afraid to use it. Liberally, of course. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 19 minutes after 7 o'clock. I'm Bob. This is Ed On. Monday. I'm glad. And let's quit fooling around and go to the phones. We got Wayne with us. Hey, Wayne, you're Head On.
Is it me?
It's you.
All right, buddy.
Radio Free Beckley.
And that's who I called. So I'm glad you're there.
Yeah.
Now, listen, you got me all fired up. See, I wasn't going to mention this guy's name or nothing like that, but...
Well, you know, when you've got somebody that hates workers, I want people to know who he is.
Right. Well, but see, here's the thing. He really wants to be important. That's why I don't like to mention his name.
Oh, well, okay.
You know, that's his whole... He likes to... You know, he doesn't know if he believes what he wrote or not. He just, you know, that's the way to get his name in the paper and... I'm serious.
That's, I mean,
you know, this whole thing started because somebody didn't realize who they were dealing with, and they jumped before they should have. And, you know,
they shot before.
Now he thinks he's important, so he could write letters, and the Chamber of Commerce loves him.
Oh well, yeah.
You know, here's this guy from Georgia. He doesn't have any family here. Let him kill him. Put him out there.
Yeah. You know?
That's, you know, it's. But anyway.
Well, yeah, and I mean, let's be fair. The chamber never met a wage cutter that they didn't love.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And I hate to repeat myself, but it astonishes. Who do they want to buy the stuff that keeps them in business? The chamber.
I don't know. I'm certainly not people that make a good living, because they don't want anybody to make a good living except them.
Right. I mean, have you priced one of these flat screen TVs lately?
No, I haven't.
You don't want to. They're very pricey. Well, what out there right now isn't very pricey?
Well, that's exactly right, and that's the amazing thing, see, because that's what this kind of leads to. Well, you know, it costs too much. The school's got to cut their budgets. You know, well, why don't they cut some of their administrative overhead?
No kidding.
That makes the big bucks. Yeah. Why don't they do that?
Talk about
top-heavy.
And then
pay the people that really, you know, work and educate your children more money. Why don't they do that?
Yeah.
But the secret is always cut the workers' pay. Cut the workers' pay.
Sure.
So, and
because that's going to make everybody happy.
Well, and it, well, you know, when you're talking about construction, first of all, what people like this guy believe and all that shows that they don't know what construction's all about anyway, and they don't understand it. They haven't been there. You know, and the fact of the matter is, when your answer is, well, cut wages, well, when you cut wages, you also cut productivity.
And quality.
And, you know, and then in the end, it ends up costing you more money.
You know, you get some jacklegs coming in to do this or that part of the project. And, you know, and then what? 4 years later, you're saying, oh, I wonder why that part of the project stinks.
Right.
You know,
basic problem with this guy is what he's telling me, and you know, he likes to pick on laborers. Mm-hmm. You know, so the laborer or janitor, as he likes to refer to them.
Yeah.
You know, now what is this? This is class warfare. That's what this.
Well,
is.
Sure it is.
Okay. So, how much is he allowed to make?
Yeah, well, right.
How much can he make? Will he tell us how much he makes?
The answer to that question, Wayne, is no. And the other answer is...
But what we make
is
public record.
Right. But it's a big secret for him.
It's a big secret for him.
Because that's personal.
Okay. And, you know, like they like to use this $35 an hour. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Big money.
Yeah, what's that come out to? 78 grand?
Maybe.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe less. Probably less.
Yeah, for 52 weeks a year and 40 hours a week. And
if you work week, and if you work 40 hours a week, and if you're a construction worker, you don't.
Right. There are times when you can't.
Exactly.
You can't pour concrete in the pouring rain.
Exactly. And if you're a construction worker at any given time, you make up 5% of the workforce of this country. And you also make up 20% of the fatalities at work. Yeah, you ought to be able to get a couple bucks extra for that.
Yeah, well.
Willing to be able to go out there and risk your life.
Well, sure. And, you know, and hey, let's not talk about risking your life. I mean, let's talk about these people that don't want us to know what they make. And
well, we're going to find out what they make. This guy, I can't, because he's not a public official.
Right, but he's definitely into M&Ms or something.
Yeah, he is into M&Ms.
But no, seriously, anybody who's ever walked around on a construction site, you know, or this guy perhaps, you know, you got to wonder, has this guy ever run a nail through the sole of his boot? Because that hurts when you do that.
You know, I don't know. He claims he has.
Well, if he hasn't run a nail through the sole of his boot, he's probably got one of those good-for-nothing janitors to thank for the fact.
Exactly.
But they make too much money.
You know, this guy claims a lot of things. He claims to have had construction license in other states before. I haven't been able to find him.
Yeah, that ain't exactly so, is
right.
it?
So, you know, I don't know. You know, if it is, show me.
Right. Let's get all Missouri on that. Show me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I can't figure these people out, Wayne. Honest to God, I can't, because it seems so very simple.
This guy wants to be important. See, his big problem is he came from somewhere else and came up here and thought that, you know, he was just going to take over because it's nothing but a bunch of stupid hillbillies.
Right.
And he doesn't have to obey any laws and all that. Well, then there were some people that said, well, maybe you ought to obey some laws. Well, now he's really against those people. You know, those are working people. That's who he's against.
Well, you know, we're the people the laws are for.
Right. But I don't want to talk about that unimportant guy anymore.
Okay. That's
good. Just, you know, I'm just...
Well, I saw it. It has to be commented on because you can't just let him get away with that.
It will be commented on. I mean, like I said, I mean, that's the answer to everything, you know. Oh, wow, we got a problem. Well, cut them workers' pay.
Yeah.
That's right, you know. Workers' comp. Oh, it's them cheating workers.
Yeah, never mind the deadbeats who don't pay their premiums.
Exactly.
Sure. You know,
everything's the workers' fault. What are you going to do, Bob? We just got to keep fighting.
Well, you know, we keep putting the sunshine on the vampires, and, you know, they dry up and they blow away.
Now, sunshine's a very interesting word because that's my next thing.
Yeah, it is Sunshine Week, isn't it?
It is Sunshine Week.
We like the sunshine.
Your Right to Know Week.
Yep.
Freedom of Information. That's what a FOIA request is.
Mm-hmm.
FOIA stands for Freedom of Information
Act.
So, I FOIA'd the Raleigh County Commission. Do you know how much sunshine costs in Raleigh County? $1 a page.
That's the...
wait a minute. I'm being unfair. The first two pages are at a bargain. They're 75 cents a piece.
Okay.
You get the first two pages for $1.50. Every page after that costs a dollar.
Is there some special paper involved, Wayne? I mean, does it have, like, little gold threads running through it, or, I mean...
It must be special, Bob.
Because, I know...
Maybe it's because they don't want you to know what they're doing.
Gee, I wonder if that
might... Because $1 a page is very prohibited to most people, like citizens.
Yeah, and they want cash on the barrel head, too, right?
Oh, yeah, they want it right there when you get the copies. No checks, please. We don't trust you. You're probably one of them janitors on a construction site. You know what I mean?
Yeah, deadbeat.
Who could trust them guys?
Yeah. And yet a 500-sheet ream of paper is maybe $5 at the store?
Yeah, if you go to the right place, you can, you know.
About a penny?
Three for eight or something
yeah,
like that.
You know,
what's that place?
Yeah. The expensive stuff's, you know, 2 pennies a page maybe.
Right.
That's a heck of a markup.
$1 a page. So what's that telling you? Even though we have the Freedom of Information Act, we are not going to let you...
have the information for free.
Enjoy it.
Well, we're not going to let you have the information for free.
Right.
And that information that they're charging you $1 a page for, the taxpayers already paid for the paper.
Exactly. They're paying the people's salary that's going to copy it.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. You know, I'm not going to say I'm not going to pay anything.
A dime a page?
Yeah. I'll be generous. 20, you know, five pages for $1.
Yeah.
20 cents a page. How's that?
Well, but of course, the beauty here is that if you get to the point where you can sue them over it, then you get all your costs handed back to you, plus your attorney's fees. That's where these people don't learn, Wayne. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Because it would be a lot easier just to say, hey, we're going to make the information available because we believe in good government.
Right.
No. What does the right wing like to say? Freedom ain't free?
No, it certainly isn't.
And apparently information's not free either.
Let me see. They're not selling what's a barrel of oil up to now?
Look,
I'm glad trees aren't going up that far.
Yeah,
it'll be $2.10 a page next week.
Yeah, $53 a barrel, something
like
that.
Yeah, something like that.
And they say within 2 years, $83.
Yeah,
we're gonna love
yeah,
that.
Well, you were right the other night. Well, you were talking about conditioning.
Yeah.
Or is that what is that the word?
Yeah, we're being conditioned.
Yes. Very true.
We're the little rats that they run through the maze.
Exactly. So anyway, all these different things are going on, and we're going to continue to fight. It amazes me that trying to stand up for and defend working people brings such disdain
yeah.
from certain people. It just doesn't seem right.
No, it doesn't. You
know, like the girls on the board?
Yeah. Well, the girls...
Did you know one of them has a desk of truth?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I heard her say it on one of the other shows. I mean, how do you defend against that? My God, a desk of truth.
Well, there's been...
I wonder if she has a little cape, you think? The DT... Desk of Truth, or I don't know.
Well,
there's got to be a costume.
There's been some hammering going on. Our buddy Ben Birch out in Illinois has decided to get in and play with it, and he's been having the devil's own good time.
Well, actually, I read a little bit of his. He plays good.
Yeah, he does.
He plays good. I don't have time.
I know.
See, here's my problem. My brain and my tongue have a real good relationship.
Yeah.
My brain and my fingers don't connect.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's
I could talk.
It's like hammering rocks.
Right.
Trying to type.
Yeah, exactly. Type.
Hey, I was that way until I had to deal with deadlines every hour, and all of a sudden it turned into, you know, I was an 80 word a minute typist, but yeah.
Right.
Look, your job's hammering nails.
Yeah, well, usually
not hammering keyboards.
Yeah. Used to.
Right. All right, man, we got to take our break, Wayne.
Hey, have a good evening.
All right, we'll see you.
All right, bye.
Later. All right, break time. 252-6200 is the number outside Beckley. It's 800-620-9967. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head On.
Good evening. This is Carl Mack, WWNR News, an advocate for female reproductive rights in West Virginia. Says there's ground level support for a bill that would mandate insurance coverage of birth control. The bill is currently waiting to be taken up in the Senate Banking and Insurance Committee. Margaret Chapman, executive director of West Virginia Free, says she expects at least some movement on the legislation this season. Chapman says it's a question of prescription fairness. She says contraceptives are part of basic health care, and she also says this bill would mandate increased health insurance coverage of prescription birth control. West Virginia's Secretary of State has a plan when it comes to helping people vote. Betty Ireland will detail that plan later this evening. The goal is to bring West Virginia into full compliance with the Help America Vote Act by the 2006 primary election. A long-standing eyesore in downtown Beckley could be coming down soon. The Raleigh County Board of Education and Beckley Common Council are taking steps to tear down the old Raleigh County Vocational Technical School on 2nd Street. The building is school board property, but the board has been unable until now to get help from the city in tearing it down because there was no demolition landfill to dispose of the building's remains. And West Virginia is one of only two states that penalizes the unemployed for receiving Social Security benefits, and that's because the fund that covers unemployed workers pays out more in benefits each month than it receives from employers in premiums. Unless that changes, officials expect the fund to run out of money between the year 2008 and 2010. For the rest of this evening, just partly cloudy. Tonight will be partly cloudy to mostly clear and chilly with a low near 25. But then tomorrow, just like today was, partly sunny, a little bit warmer tomorrow with temperatures in the mid to upper 40s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
WWNR Beckley.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. I'm Rebecca Jameson.
And I'm Doug Cunningham. Last year, 375,000 new workers joined unions in the U.S. Major multi-union organizing efforts are underway in 2005, too, including the Walmart campaign, Arizona residential construction unionizing efforts, higher education worker organizing drives in New York City, and Puerto Rican public sector organizing drives. AFSCME's Paul Booth says that powerful political efforts are attacking unions as this robust organizing effort is underway.
They're doing it in the Department of Defense. Mr. Rumsfeld is doing it, taking away union rights for those workers. We have the governors of Indiana and Missouri just stroke of the pen wiped out union rights for state employees. We have decision after decision after decision of the National Labor Relations Board. These are politically driven decisions by right-wingers in political power who, if they are giving us any message at all, it is that we must be effective in the political sphere just to save the amount of rights that workers have today.
Booth says workers in the U.S. should be able to just make an easy decision to join a union without employer and government hostility.
The decision about whether to join a union, in our opinion, ought to be like the decision about whether to join a church and which church you want to join. It should be a true matter that's left up to the individual or the group.
The United States infrastructure is collapsing, and it could take as much as $1.6 trillion to fix it. The distressing new report from the American Society of Civil Engineers gives the public infrastructure of roads, sewers, dams, and bridges a letter grade of D, down from a D+ in 2001. One of the most unsettling findings was the need for $11 billion to upgrade the nation's drinking water system. The report finds that federal funding only provides 10% of what is actually needed to prevent billions of gallons of untreated sewage from dumping into surface water each year. And even after the blackout of 2003, while the demand for power increases, the capacity of the nation's power transmission system has fallen by 2%. Published material and surveys of nearly 2,000 engineers were used to compile the report card, which can be found at www.asce.org.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. U.S. workers are facing a pension crisis that's growing worse. The federal agency guaranteeing pensions is running an annual deficit of about $10 billion. In 2003, that agency, the Pension Benefits Guarantee Corporation, reimbursed pension plans affecting a million workers. According to the Labor Research Association, pension underfunding levels, more than $278 billion, are far more than the agency can handle. Half of all U.S. workers don't have pensions, while just 22% have defined benefit plans. You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
A man who just loves conservatives. Baked, boiled, or fried. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. I'm Bob. This is Head On. Let's be non-political for a moment. John Kempe was kind enough to print me out my NCAA tournament bracket. And I've got to fill it out here later. Do any of you follow that? I mean, what you give WVU a halfway decent chance against Creighton, right? I'm not so certain, because like I said, they both have a pretty nice 3-point percentage shooting, and according to the newspaper, at least, very similar teams. I think the NCAA did that deliberately. But assuming we beat Creighton, then we get Wake Forest. Because, wait a minute, am I wrong? I don't know. Maybe this thing didn't print out right. Oh well, I could have sworn we were paired up to get Wake Forest, but maybe I was wrong. Or whoever Wake Forest plays and then beats, because Wake Forest is not going to lose. I sort of fall into the March Madness thing. It's kind of like following the hockey playoffs. This is the real season. So, yeah, go figure. An interesting story out of Charleston. Slugged from our AP wire, slugged, Ireland recommends optical scanning voting machines. Well, that's not nice. But I told you a long time ago, the minute that this Republican got into the Secretary of State's office, we were going to be doing some electronic voting. Yes, indeedy. First line, Secretary of State Betty Ireland plans to help West Virginia counties become compliant with federal voting laws by using optical scan voting machines. You know the ones with no paper trail, the ones that screwed up all over the country during the last election, the ones that you cannot trust to actually record your vote, and even if you think they recorded your vote, won't guarantee you by paper that they did. Ireland says her office is recommending optical scanner systems because they comply with the federal rules. They keep a paper trail, and because they're affordable. Well, a paper trail, and because they're affordable.
Who makes them? That's not in this story. Is it ES&S? Is it Diebold? Because you know those are owned by serious, hardcore right-wing Republicans, right? If we wind up, I don't know about you, but if we wind up with electronic voting machines, I'll be voting absentee from now on. I'll vote in some manner whereby I don't have to use those machines. I'm not a Luddite, but I'm not gonna give them any greater opportunity than they already have to steal my vote. 28 counties already have the optical scanners. And yet, none of those 28 counties got their votes counted and into headquarters faster than in this past November cycle. No one. The optical scanning counties, the punch card counties, none of them got their ballots in faster than a little old Wyoming county using paper ballots with X marks. Check the guy you want to win. They counted them faster, and their results were more reliable. But somehow or another, the optical scanners are cheaper than the paper ballots. Huh? What? What's wrong with a paper ballot? Why can't we have one? I'd like it. The bond levy in Fayette County walked in, lo and behold, little paper ballot, marked it, walked away, took me about 15 seconds, done. But no, we've got to have Johnny Jump Jet optical scanner machines, right? Is anything fishy there? Do you smell something fishy in the works?
It's all part of the Help America Vote Act. Yeah, that's right.
I don't trust them. I won't trust them. Because I don't believe that corporate America has any business in our electoral process. Is that liberalism? Or is that just common sense? I don't like vote buying on anybody's part, especially not the makers of the machines. What's the old line? It doesn't matter who votes as much as it matters who counts the votes. And when who's counting the votes is a partisan hack for one political party or the other. And I assure you, I would be saying the same thing if this was a company that was owned by a bunch of raging liberals. Of course, we wouldn't be inclined to cheat anybody out of their vote. That I would be saying the same thing. Government counts the votes. Because you and me, we're the government, aren't we? I guess I'm just crazy. Let's go to Mel. Hey, Mel, you're head on. Mel.
How you doing, Bob?
Doing good.
I feel like you feel. I'll either vote absentee or I won't vote. We done messed up and put another Republican in, and she took credit for cleaning this election thing up here a couple of weeks ago when these people that hadn't filed their campaign finance reports.
Mm-hmm.
I called down there the other day and asked them about one individual, and they just beat around and threatened me and everything else. And, we got another Republican down there, so here we go again. But if they don't get that corrected, and if they start those Diebold or Diebold machines, I'll either not vote or I'll vote where they can count it or forget it. I was going to talk about that a little bit, but it just amazes me, these Republicans, these conservatives, now they're talking about this report, what was it, New York Times, where they think they found some weapons of mass destruction somewhere or something. Yeah, I thought they had done conceded that there wasn't any. Their own reports that there wasn't any, and they switched it to we went over to liberate them.
That's right.
And now what are they doing? They going to convince us that they did have them?
What did the sand blow away and suddenly there was a nuclear reactor, Mel? I mean, this is just more of the same from this crowd.
Hey, you know what? If they found one, it's one that Halliburton stuck there, sold Iran there in 98. I'm kind of getting like they are about drowning the kittens there. I don't care what they showed me now. One of the other shows there earlier said that, they didn't have maimed at us. When North Korea can tell us that, yeah, we've got nuclear weapons. You don't like it? Tough.
Right.
And Iran, you know, Halliburton sold them their logging part, sold them stuff and took it through Italy and sold it to them and paid a stiff fine when they got caught. You know, where is it now that Halliburton is that Iran that they're over there doing business with, and they said that it was against the law, but they're going to give them so long, 3 years to get out. Did you hear that?
Yeah, yeah. But now they're packing their bags because they say it's not a good business climate.
Oh, because they got caught again?
Right.
You know, the suckers have been caught stealing money off of me and you and everybody else about three times, so... My Lord, we got ourselves in a mess.
Well, you know, Mel, if you and I got caught stealing like that, we know where we'd be.
Well, I still think Bush and Cheney would probably be there, too, if he hadn't stole the votes there in Ohio again enough to win the election. But these people just amaze me. Like I said, I thought we had already decided that it wasn't over weapons of mass destruction, that it was over... us liberating that country over there,
yeah,
and being the great American police again, and now all of a sudden they're switching it again to convince somebody something. You know, they're not going to convince me nothing except if he would have had those weapons and had them aimed at us, you know, he would have used them when we entered and we invaded their country.
And
anybody
with
having sense would have.
Sure. And of course, you know, the other thing that's frequently forgotten, Mel, is the fact that any weapon that he had or had hopes of having, he didn't have because of us. He had because he wanted to keep Iran at bay because, you know, there was Saddam, you know, crazy, bad human being, but he was running a secular state where women could go to school and drive cars and didn't have to walk around with a, you know, wearing a tent. And yet, you know, right next door to him, he's got a bunch of religious crazies, namely, Iran, and that's who he wanted to have the weapons for. He wanted to make Iran think that he could make their lives really miserable if they screwed with it.
You know what? I'm kind of thinking that they were a sovereign country, and I'm kind of thinking they had the right to have those weapons. You know, what can we do about Iran having nuclear if they've got them now? What are we going to do about North Korea? What are we going to do if China attacks there in Taiwan?
What are we going to do about Pakistan, Mel?
Yeah, we're not going to do anything, tell you the truth, I don't think, unless
right.
we go all out to a draft. And, you know, I really believe that we're withdrawing from Iraq. I believe we're slowly, from the indications I see, obviously they're not going to tell us that they are, but I really believe they are because there's too many guys I know that came home from there. That's I figured they'd pack them back up and send them back like they were doing. But these guys I know has come back here and you know, going back to work and stuff. So
well, some of that is going on, Mel. But remember, what is it, 14 permanent bases we're building over there?
Yeah.
Somebody's going to staff them, and it's not going to be Iraqis.
Well, somebody said I've seen something where that they were building those things right across that oil line where it's coming from. Where's that? They're going to put a permanent oil line in there. And you know, just because our gasoline prices are going up over here still don't mean that Halliburton don't have a lot to do with that.
Oh, no.
You know, if they can put their hands in our pockets, that's what they're going to do. And you know, they're not going to give anybody a break. That don't prove anything to me, except they're just greedier than I gave them credit for.
I think you're right, Mel. Hey, we got to roll along. I got to take a couple more calls. Thanks so
okay,
much, Mel.
Bob,
I appreciate
good talking
it.
To you.
Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
Bye now. And Ed, hey Ed, you're head on.
Ed,
there you are.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. You?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing better than ever today. I got promoted by the Republican Party today.
Woo, Lordy!
They put me up there with you and Dr. Bill. I'm one of those guys that calls in at night.
Uh-huh.
And I'm surprised. I'm like one of the other callers. I'm so proud of that. Of course, I know I don't qualify educational wise. But thought-wise and where I stand on politics and stuff, I'm really proud of it. And but I had some comments to make on Bush dissection of the world and the United States and of everything going.
Go right ahead.
Huh?
Go right ahead.
Well, I just I'm just more aware than ever. Every day you see more of what's happening and the lies we've been lied to and so forth. And I had a conversation this morning on the early show about it. And, of course, it wound up in a hollering contest. But, you know, when you get two pig-headed guys together, I guess that's what happens. But anyway, they haven't changed my mind at all. They've just reinforced what I needed to know, that I'm on the right side. And as dumb as I might be, or as smart as I might be, being like you guys, I'm not stupid enough to be one of them Republicans that called, a couple of them Republicans
that
called in.
That's right.
But I wanted to comment on the VA a little bit.
Go ahead.
We had one guy that got on there, of course, you know, all of them, all those guys talk the same way. They don't know what they're talking about. Number one, I made a statement one time that about the VA and us having to pay the $250 up front.
Mm-hmm.
And I got some reaction on that, saying that if we made $22,500 a year, we should have to pay that. What these people don't know like that, most of them have never been in the service, so they hid behind something rather. But that be as it may, we got paid that, and we earned that by the service from back then. That's what the standard was. And along come Bush and takes that away from us. And this one guy got on there and said, well, that's just $21 for a prescription for 3 months, which he don't know what he's talking about. That's, it's, if the, this thing goes through, it's going to be $15. And guys like myself, it's on 7 and 8 prescriptions. That's a pretty good chunk out of what we get.
Oh, without a doubt.
And, that, I just wanted to inform the guy, the Steve special. I wanted to let him know that that's where that was. And the VA has been doing a pretty good job. But just, you know, I've said this before. When Clinton was in there, our prescriptions was $2 a month, which is reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And then it moved to 7, which was still reasonable. But to double that, you know, what's the next move? Double 15?
I think that's probably not unreasonable.
Yeah, well, that's according to their standards. But I just wanted some of them that was running their mouth, because I couldn't get back in on some of them that called in this morning. And, you know, we had another bout on this land out here. And, you know, of course, one of the idiots said, well, pack up, move if you don't like it. You know, how far do we run?
Right. Well, at what point, you know, I always thought a man's home was his castle, Ed.
Well, I'm not sure what it is anymore. It's, you know, and when they bring us, if they get this through, which I'm leaning toward thinking that they might now, since they've changed it and since they're not going to put the houses on the riverfront, and they're still going after something, I forget whether it's April the 3rd or April the 23rd, but they're still resubmit the what they want to do. But it's still not a matter of up and moving. You know, do we do that for everything that comes along? Are they going to move Fayetteville because of Walmart wants to come in over there and the people don't want to be crowded up like that? And, you know, again, I say that when you got a part of the Chamber of Commerce on your zoning board and the county commission thinking like Republicans, we're not going to get a whole lot out of them, I don't think. And that's what's making this country go all to pieces. The working people, that is the taxpayer that is supporting everything that goes on, all the burden on his back, is getting the short end on every turn. And then they holler about me calling in, you know. Yeah, you know, it's who was it said at the Gettysburg Address? It's a squeaky wheel that gets the grease.
Yep.
And I'm going to keep on.
Well, I don't think that's inappropriate. I think that's the right way to go about things.
Yeah, but I'm just really proud tonight to be in your category. We'll have to go golfing and hit them.
That sounds good. I can't wait for spring, Ed. Thanks so much, man.
All right, buddy.
Have a great evening.
All right, you too.
Bye now.
Bye.
And let's see, Jeff. Hey, Jeff, you're head on.
Hello?
Yeah.
How you doing?
Doing good.
Hey, the concert was last night.
Yeah, I know. I was going to ask if the folks who won tickets went.
I let my wife and her sister go because they don't get to do a whole lot of stuff together, and I thought that they would go.
Well, that was mighty decent of you.
Did
they bring you a T-shirt or anything?
Yeah, a hat.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't. Okay, that's cool.
They said that the floor seats on that Coliseum down there were $125 a piece.
Oh, yeah.
Backstage passes. They had four rows reserved up front.
Mm-hmm.
It was roped off, and they brought those people in separately, and they had the little thing around their neck for backstage.
Right.
$500. I wouldn't give $500 to see anybody.
Would you? There might be a couple of people, but I can't imagine... Well, I mean, you know, dig up John and George. I got $500 for a Beatles reunion. That's about it.
They said that it was awesome, which I've seen a lot of good concerts. I know what really good singers and players sound like, and they, you know, there's four or five of them that sing, you know, all the harmonies.
Oh, yeah, that's what those guys were so good at to begin with.
Have you ever seen them before?
Long, long ago, and I can't even remember which incarnation.
You can't even remember where you was?
No, I just can't remember who was in the band.
Oh, have they went through some different members?
Oh yeah. I mean, Don Felder.
I know who he is.
Yeah, Timothy B. Schmidt. That was not the original lineup last night.
Yeah, Don Felder wasn't with them, I don't think, last night.
No, they canned him. They canned him, what, a couple of years ago, I think?
About 2000.
Yeah, over greed stuff.
Because she said that they introduced their guitar player and said that he had been with the band about 2000, I think.
Yeah.
She said he was hot, though. Good player, you know what I mean?
Okay, thank you for clearing that up. I don't need you talking about guys who are hot on this show, okay?
A hot player. She said that Joe Walsh is cool.
Yeah, oh, he always will be.
He's from Cleveland, you know?
Right.
I'm a Cleveland sports fan.
Well, I'm glad. That was awful nice of you to share your tickets, Jeff. I appreciate that, and I hope your wife and your sister had a real good time.
Well, I just wanted to call in and thank you for... Letting us have a chance to win them.
Well, you know, I appreciate that. A lot of that credit goes to our program director, Rick Reiser, who decided that our little evening romp and rigmarole deserved a little bit of attention, and gave me those three pairs to give away. I'll be curious to see if anybody else calls in and talks about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, one other thing, quick, if I got a minute.
Yeah.
Do I have a minute?
Barely.
Okay. Well. One thing that hasn't been talked about with the new bankruptcy laws is that if you make less than the median income of your state that you live in, you still get to file bankruptcy under the laws as they currently stand. You still get to have the debt totally eliminated, which the median income for West Virginia would be right around $31,000. So if you're under $31,000, you can still file bankruptcy under the proposed laws. These have a long ways to go to where they are laws.
Well, yeah, it's still got to go into the House, Jeff. I mean, I acknowledge.
But it's not like... grab the little man. Actually, there's a provision in there to let the little man off. Because if you're below the average income, the median income of your state, you still like you are now. So.
Well, but, you know, the thing is, I don't consider somebody who makes 32 grand to be rich.
Well,
and you know what? When around half of the bankruptcies are caused by medical bills, and the other half are caused by divorce and disability.
Well, I would like to see a provision written in there that says if you have medical bills on as part of your filing over, say, $5,000, then you fall into this rule that lets you eliminate that down to zero. But I don't think that people that have bought diamond rings and big screen TVs should be able to hit clear on the calculator. That's
well,
not fair.
Well, fine. Then talk to that crowd, okay? Because that's not the $32,000 a year crowd, Jeff.
Well,
you know, that's the $500,000 a year crowd, and they're still in the clear anyway. But we're out of time. Thanks, and I'm glad they enjoyed the show.
Well, thanks for letting us have the chance to win the tickets. All right.
All right. Take care, Jeff.
Bye-bye.
All right. Time for the top of the hour news from ABC. And after that, more of your calls. If you're on hold, stay that way, please. And I think we got a line open. 252-6200, outside Beckley, 800-620-9967. This is WWNR AM 620, Beckley, West Virginia. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
proud of over 50 years of broadcasting history.
You can depend on us.
News Talk 620, WWNR, Beckley. It's 8 o'clock.
800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the partnership.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 5.5 minutes after 8 o'clock. Where'd that first hour go? Anybody see it? He shot right out the door. And for those who are interested, I have one of my daughters in with me this evening. This is a thing they call job shadowing. I guess where we, you know, where we go and see what daddy does for a living. I'm lucky. This is, you know, this is more fun than a barrel of monkeys. 252-6200 is the phone number. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. Chris is with us. He's been with us for a while, too. Chris, thanks for hanging on.
That's okay, Bob.
What's up?
You remember in World War II when the Nazis, they got everybody on the train, closed the cars up. No, nobody could hardly breathe. There was hardly any room, you know.
Right.
To stumble or anything.
Yeah, the cattle cars to Dachau and Bergen-Belsen.
Yeah. And there was no water, no anything. Well, there's a website called Demand Media.
Mm-hmm.
And on this website, you can see independent news, and you can see little documentaries that were shown in this country, but not shown very much. Shown.
Demand Media.
DemandMedia.com? You see stuff in the BBC, too.
Okay.
Okay, I downloaded and watched a documentary called Afghan Massacre.
Afghan Massacre?
Yeah.
Wow.
We, the American troops.
The American people.
Took the Taliban, took 6,000 troops from the Taliban, were told if they would surrender, no harm would come to them. So here they come in. And we killed about 3,000 of them.
Oh, you're kidding.
We loaded them into containers. No air, no water. And took them on a really, really long drive. And in the documentary it says that they were licking at the sweat on each other's bodies and the blood from the wounds to try to get some liquid. And when they got there, most of them were dead. The ones that weren't dead were in shock or passed out. So then we took them out and we finished them off. Now, doesn't that sound familiar?
Now, these people, Chris, were unarmed?
Unarmed, yeah.
They were no longer combatants?
Right.
And I'm guessing...
Prisoners of war.
I'm guessing these weren't exactly... Well, we didn't call them prisoners of war because, you know, they didn't have a groovy uniform.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm guessing this report you saw didn't have that little eye from CBS or anything on it.
No, it didn't.
And we wonder why the rest of the world despises us.
But guess who was in the end of the program?
Who?
I cannot remember his name. I was going to write it down, but I forgot to. The man that investigated the crimes against Pinochet.
Mm-hmm.
He appears in it, and he says... And the person doing the report said, do you think the Americans deal with this? He said, there's no question that Americans deal about this. And they have voices, they have people appearing in the video of the Taliban and people from that region with their faces distorted, their voices distorted, saying, yeah, there were American troops here, there were American troops there. And they knew about it. Of course, they were there. And in this video, you see John Walker Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
You see footage of the American Taliban, right?
Right.
You see footage of him that wasn't shown on American television, but you do see some of the footage that was shown on American television. So obviously, of course, we didn't get the whole story.
Well, no, of course not. We got the embedded story.
Yeah, so...
I know, and the thing is, I wish I had it left in me, Chris, to jump up and down and scream about this, but it's... war crimes are becoming the norm, and not the and not
what? What's the word I'm looking for?
They flaunt them.
Yeah.
They just plain flaunt them. Look what we did. And you're not going to do anything about it either.
No.
I've been watching and downloading stuff from this site. It's just amazing. I saw a documentary about the flooding in Bangladesh. And it's just awful. Stories from Iran and stories from all over the world. And there's no way, no possible way that you're going to see these on any, hardly any American television.
Well, yeah, and Chris, I mean, let's be honest about this. Even if it was possible to watch American television and see it, how many people do you think would even care to try?
Or would believe it?
Right, because why? Or would believe it? Because we're not capable of this? Of course we're capable of this.
Of course we're capable. We caught Mary and Barry doing crack on camera and watched, and they reelected them.
That's true.
So, you know, what do you have to do to be bad anymore?
Be somebody besides an American?
You have to be a Democrat to be bad and to be worthy of prosecution.
Oh, yeah, because we're not even, yeah, because we're not even supposed to be talking about this right now, Chris, but, you know, it's un-American.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
I'm terribly worried.
Yeah, I know, but what I'm getting at here.
I know what you're getting at.
Yeah. We have a problem. We have a little war crimes problem. And, you know, nobody's going to be called to account for it. Look, we're sending what's his name, Michael Bolton or what, to the UN now, a guy who said that the top 10 stories of the United Nations building should be blown off.
Yeah.
And this guy's going to make our way in the international community better.
Yeah, and let's get Karen Hughes back. Boy, we need her. Let's let Condoleezza run for president.
Nah, now she says she's not going to do that. Absolutely not.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Maybe she'll do her own little fact-finding study.
You know what? She's a Sim.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen that video game, The Sims?
Yeah.
Computer game? She looks like, walks like, talks like, acts like a Sim.
You got a good point there.
She's even got Sim hair.
Yeah.
She's not real. I mean, there's no beating heart underneath her skin. She's some sort of a construct. She's not real. So,
well, maybe somebody's made her a deal for vice president.
Now see that she was pressed. To, you know, will you say you're not running for president? I'm not running for president. So that sounds like somebody's. Yeah, that would be perfect.
Yeah.
Her running as a vice presidential candidate, that would be, you know, just beautiful, because you couldn't be mean to her, because we saw from what from Senator Byrd's remarks about her incompetence. Yeah, and she's incompetent. That suddenly, you know, that was racism.
Yeah.
You know, just saying that someone's incompetent for the job was suddenly racism. So, you know, whoever debated her in 4 years, 3 years, whoever debated her would, by definition, not be able to talk about whether or not she was fit for the job because, oh, it's racist, rawr, you know.
Well, America Online had a picture side by side. They had a picture of Hillary Clinton and a picture of Condoleezza. And it asked to vote on whether both of them should run.
No and no.
No and no.
And there's no sexism involved with that. I'll tell you now, and I think you know, Chris, we're going to get our butts handed to us again if we run another go-along, get-along Democrat who doesn't want to fight.
Yeah, let's get a billionaire candidate for the Democratic Party that can come to West Virginia and shake hands with coal miners and go, boy, I tell you what, I know what you're going through.
Yeah. Didn't wash very well, did it?
No, it didn't. It didn't. No, you said that you think Jeb's going to run out and they're flouting Giuliani. Oh, my goodness.
Well, yeah, Giuliani.
Subway presidency.
Well, Giuliani's getting to straighten up because he's been told that his pro-gay, pro-choice stance is not welcome. And
well, no, that wouldn't wash with them, would it?
No. So, you know, Giuliani's out. If they could make it so Arnold would run, Arnold would run. But you know, right now you've got a lot of little fish out there, and frankly, Jeb has to have the inside track because the machine's already built.
That's true.
And all he does is step into the Royal Coach, and it rides to Pennsylvania Avenue.
Well, I don't disagree with you that he's going to run. I just don't think he's going to run this time.
Well, he's such a rotten parent. You know, you got to consider the junkie that they've got for a daughter.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel sorry for anybody. You know what? Other families down in Florida who have junkies for daughters, their junkie daughters are in prison now. Noelle Bush
mm-hmm.
walked, cakewalked.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
So,
I feel like it's open season. But
I would be remiss if I didn't mention that one particular video that I sent a link to you for.
Yes.
Yeah, governor. God, it just disturbs me. While George Bush was governor, he was in a television studio, and you can watch it on demand media. He is quoted as saying, "Is that guy still telling me what to do?" And he flips a bird at the camera. Well, folks, you can see that.
Oh, there's all kinds of stuff. But, you know, we gave him a pass on everything, Chris.
Oh, yeah.
Give him a pass on. Well, you know, those documents were forged that Dan Rather had. Well, to hell with the documents. What about what was in the documents?
What about the documentary, Robert Greenwald's documentary, where all of a sudden they're saying, well, it was a falsified report. It was a bad report. We don't know where it came from. Well, yeah. You know, Dan Rather got fired for that.
I know.
And all he did was just say it on the news. We went to war because of it.
That's true. Bush lied. Clinton lied and nobody died. Bush died and thousands died. Hey,
Bush
Chris.
Lies, people die.
That's right. Got to roll on, Chris.
You're doing good, Bob. Thank you.
Thanks, man. Later. All right, time for a break. Stick around. 252-6200 is the number. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. This is Head On. I'm Bob.
Hi, this is Linda Luger, Executive Director of the United Way of Southern West Virginia. Thanks to all the United Way volunteers for the assistance they provided during the United Way 2004 campaign. Without them, we would not be able to provide the support necessary for our 20 nonprofit agencies that help those who are unable to help themselves. Due to the time spent by volunteers attending meetings, making presentations, making phone calls, asking for contributions, helping with the planning and staging of campaign events, taking time from a busy schedule to film or record a TV or radio spot, and numerous other activities, we have had a successful campaign. Without the time and effort provided by these caring individuals in Raleigh, Nicholas, Fayette, and Summers counties, this would not have been possible. Thumbs up, hats off, and thanks. Because of you, the United Way of Southern West Virginia continues to make a lasting impression on our community. If you would like to be a United Way volunteer, please contact me at 253-2111.
You've heard it all before. Lose weight while you sleep, erase your debts instantly, or make a fortune in your spare time. How about this one? Slash construction wages and 4 schools can be built for the price of 3. Ridiculous? Of course. Study after study proves that wage cuts won't reduce school construction costs. In fact, wage cuts hurt local companies and damage our communities. So don't believe everything you hear until you've heard the fact. A message from the ACT Foundation.
West Virginia's only live nighttime talker, Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. Almost 20 minutes after 8 o'clock. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. That what Chris was talking about, demandmedia.com, you can see a lot of really, really, what? Fascinating? No. Torture is not fascinating. Interesting? No. Murder isn't interesting. Heartrending? Yeah, heartrending works. Gut gagging? That works too. And you can see why it is, you know, if you, you can see why it is that if you're paying attention, you realize we don't have a free press in this country anymore. We do not have a free press in this country anymore. And that's just pitiful. Because the end of the free press is the primrose path to fascism, don't you think? Let's go back to the phones. Jim has been waiting. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Hello?
Hey.
How are you?
Doing good.
I think a good word that you're trying to probably locate is horrific.
That and nauseating.
And, you know, you can fool some of the people some of the time, but you just can't fool all the people all the time. And eventually, these things are going to out. And, you know, back when the British were fighting the Muslims, a lot of times they would threaten, or they actually would sow the fallen Muslim in the skin of the pig.
Mm-hmm.
And that way his soul could not go to heaven. Did you know that?
I had heard that somewhere along the way, but, oh, God, I think I'd managed to forget it.
But, I mean, you know, we talk about the Holocaust, and you talk about cattle cars, things like that. Well, I invite you to go to the museum in Washington where you can sit in those cattle cars. You can actually pick up some of those stones that they had to carry up the hill at Nantes and KZ. But going back to the present situation, you know, it's really funny in light of what your last caller just said, that Chief Justice Robert Jackson at Nuremberg said we can't ignore these things lest they be repeated. But now we're going back and we're trying to justify WMDs when there were none to be found. And, you know, Bob, if there were WMDs, I believe I can tell you where Tony Soprano and Uncle Junior put Jimmy Hoffa.
I think you're right.
You know?
Yeah, and, I mean, it's going to look at least a little bit suspicious, isn't it, Jim, that we've been there for, what, 2 years now? And, you know, Halliburton's had the run of the country, and now something comes up? Nah, not
well,
right.
They could put anything they want to probably plant something, you know? It's kind of like what sometimes they will do to people they want to bust for narcotics. They can plant all kinds of stuff on you, you know?
Sure, absolutely.
And as far as our position over there, you know, Condoleezza won a cup first of the month or whatever she went, I don't know. She went over there trying to tell some people what we were going to do, and I think she came back to her with her tail between her legs because her boss then came back and said, well, we'll try to let diplomacy and we'll try to work with the European Union, but at the same time saying he was going to leave all options on the table, which leads me to believe that he's going to just wait until, oh, I don't know, either he just gets impatient or whatever, and he stomps his little foot, and we're going to try the same thing in Iran that we did in Iraq, you know?
Yeah.
And I believe that's where we're going.
Oh, I think there's every chance of that.
And, but I just wonder, you know, how much longer are we going to be able to conceal from our own people and the rest of the world if, you know, atrocities and just outright prevarications and falsifications about our military policies.
Well, the rest of the world, we can't conceal it from. The rest of the world already knows. Did you see, it was a month ago or so, Jim, the photograph of the little girl covered in her parents' blood?
Yeah.
You saw that one, right? And for those who don't know the story, it was one of those checkpoint stories where these non-English speaking Arabic family, not a terrorist in the bunch, got wasted for no apparent reason by some very, very nervous American troops. And a photograph was taken, a little girl huddled in a corner, just literally bathed in the blood of her family.
You know, maybe if they let one of those gay guys at Defense Language to be deployed there, he may have been there to create a climate of understanding, you know?
Yeah, one of those the gay Arabic speakers that we fired 300 of.
Exactly.
You know,
maybe that would have helped the situation out, prevent things like that, you know?
It might have been nice. Of course, you know, that's more of that 2020 hindsight. But, you know, what I was saying, the rest of the world has seen that. The rest of the world knows what happened in the shipping, the solid steel shipping containers in Afghanistan. We can't hide it from the rest of the world, and that's why the rest of the world is disgusted with us. That's why China feels absolutely no compulsion whatsoever against standing up and lecturing us about our human rights record.
Well, really, I mean, who are we to be the proponent of human rights when we are pursuing policies that prevent that totally absent themselves from those from any semblance of human rights?
Well, and again, who are we? Indeed, who are we? You know, is there a karmic price to be paid? Is there a what goes around comes around price to be paid?
I'm afraid there is.
If you've done it under the least of these, you've done it also under to
I'm
me
afraid
price.
There is.
But the thing is, the American people, Jim, will never complain about it. You got to remember, everyone says, "Well, them hippies stopped the war." Do you? I'm sure you know, because you know it's your generation, man. How many people died in Vietnam before the protests even got started?
Thousands.
Thousands upon thousands, and we were okay with it. We sat there and you know we had news, man. It was the living room war.
Oh, each evening.
Yeah, we saw the bodies being hauled out. We don't even get to see the caskets coming off the plane now, and we are complacent. We are sheeple, Jim. It's pitiful. So, you know, at what point I think it sort of dovetailed with the death of Martin Luther King, the death of Robert Kennedy. And that's where the anti-war movement got its impetus, because they realized that they were willing to do it to us as well as anybody else. Now, I don't think we've got that. We don't have that now. So I think this could go on.
Remember Ramparts magazine?
Yeah.
You know, you don't see stuff like that too much anymore. I remember one cover particularly of interest to me was a picture of Allen Ginsberg in some kind of wild getup, and there was an aircraft. He was sitting on an air freight casket. And the caption of the Ramparts magazine that month was, "Mama is your baby in this box."
Yeah.
And, you know,
but Jim,
I don't know what it's going to take to desensitize.
Look, there's an inveterate boob in the White House. We all pretty much agree on that. This, you know, he's an idiot. He's a puppet. He does what he's told. But there are some very, very crafty, very, very evil people underneath him or above him pulling the strings.
Well, listen, the time running past. I want to ask you about one other thing.
Yeah.
What about Mr. DeLay and his little junket with the South Koreans for a tune of $800,000? You heard about that?
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar with it. And, of course, they've already got their excuse.
Which is?
Well, you know, we didn't know that they had changed the paperwork and this guy was actually a foreign agent at the time we were taking the $800,000 trip to South Korea. We thought he was just giving us one because he was a nice guy.
Do what?
Yeah, really. That's their excuse. Well, you know, he'd only become a registered foreign agent a couple of weeks before he offered us the trip.
And the paperwork didn't get to the right people.
Right.
And we have fax machines, and we have, you know, we can send stuff electronically, and it didn't get from one point of the district to the other.
Damnedest thing, that. But, yeah, that's their excuse. Oh, there was no way we could have possibly known that we were accepting gifts from a foreign power.
Well, you know, I'll tell you something. The bigger these lies get, and, you know,
But, Jim, we swallow them.
Well, pretty soon, not even our gullets are going to, I hear the political gag reflex, but stuff like that, I mean, I don't even think the gag reflex could be conquered to that extent.
Well, DeLay is a crook. I mean, that's all he is. He is a dirty, nasty little walking criminal enterprise. And, you know, he gives he's given tons of money to Shelley Moore, the second district congresswoman from West Virginia.
Right.
And this trim pack of his, the little foster children's charity set up to launder all this money through. And, of course, you know what's happening. They're getting ready to go after Ronnie Earls down there in Texas with both barrels.
You mean the prosecutor?
Yeah. The one who has prosecuted Democrats and Republicans alike because of his gag reflex, Jim. You know, you said it. And they are going after him with both barrels. And I did read an interesting thing today. Bless his heart, Alan Mollahan, the first district congressman, has thrown a wrench into the works in the House Ethics Committee. because the new rules are tied up at, are deadlocked at five apiece, because that's the only committee where the Democrats hold as many seats as the Republicans do, the House Ethics Committee. And Alan Mollahan has said, ain't nothing going anywhere until we sort this nightmare out.
Well, let's hope that the bills of the cost may grind slowly, but exceedingly fine.
Well, I'd like for God to give it an extra crank right now. I think you probably feel the same way, don't you, Jim?
Yeah, I do. But, you know, I'll tell you, these things aren't going to happen overnight, but I mean, they do happen. I mean, you know, Newt Gingrich was such a power, and look what happened to him. You know, these people carry within themselves the seeds of self-destruction.
Well, they do.
And evil will do that. I mean, you know, they will endure for a season, but they will be cut down.
Well,
really.
they would do well to adhere to the advice of Satchel Paige, who said, don't look back. Something may be gaining on you. It's gaining on them, Jim. The rubber mask is off. We know what they are, and we know what they're there for. Even the religious community is beginning to figure it out.
Well, I hope so, and I hope it'll come sooner than later, but it will come.
All right, thanks, Jim. Have a great night.
You too.
Later. All right, time for a break. When we come back, I've got a little bit more here, some interesting things to blather on about, not the least of which is an open letter to George Bush from a so-called liberated Iraqi. You might enjoy it. Makes quite a tale. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head On.
Good evening. This is Carl Mack, WWNR News. A 16-year-old boy accidentally shot and killed his 11-year-old brother this weekend while they were playing with guns. The shooting occurred Saturday afternoon in Crab Orchard. As the boys were playing with their 13-year-old brother, their parents were out shopping at the time. Raleigh County Sheriff's Deputy W.R. Killen says the 11-year-old loaded a 20-gauge shotgun and gave it to his older brother to unload. As the older boy tried to break it down, it discharged and then shot the 11-year-old in the chest. The sheriff's department would not release the boy's name today. The deputy says the 16-year-old will not be charged. A Raleigh County man accused of robbing the Whitesville State Bank has waived his preliminary hearing. Earl Moore is being held in the Southern Regional Jail on $1 million bond, and police say the Glenn Rogers man entered the Whitesville Bank in Crab Orchard last Tuesday, waved a revolver, and then demanded cash. Moore allegedly wore a wig and painted on a beard before he entered the bank. He then fled in a getaway car but drove it into a ditch, became stuck in the snow, and walked to a little general store back toward the bank where he was arrested. Moore's case will be considered by a Raleigh County grand jury in May. The Senate Judiciary Committee is set to take up the methamphetamine bill this week, but one group is already pledging to make some changes to how they sell one of meth's key ingredients. Representatives of the Oil Marketers and Grocers Association have agreed not to sell products that contain ephedrine and pseudoephedrine as their primary ingredients. Omega represents convenience stores throughout the state. Vineyard says the change will not completely remove cold medicine from the shelves. And an advocate for female reproductive rights in West Virginia says there's ground-level support for a bill which would mandate insurance coverage of birth control. The bill is currently waiting to be taken up in the Senate Banking and Insurance Committee. Margaret Chapman, executive director of the state West Virginia Free, says she expects at least some movement on the legislation this session. That's the news. Now here's the forecast, looking pretty good, at least for tonight and tomorrow. Partly cloudy, low 25, and then for Tuesday, about like today, except a little bit warmer. Partly to mostly sunny tomorrow, and temperatures in the mid to upper 40s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
WWNR Beckley.
It's hilarious to hear the former high-stepping studs of corporate America now claiming that they were just humble mules, pulling the plow but totally ignorant of what was going on around them. Ken Lay of Enron, Richard Scrushy of HealthSouth, and Bernie Ebbers of WorldCom are among the ex-CEOs who once accepted public accolades and millions of dollars each in personal pay for being managerial geniuses who guided their corporation to the top. but have since tumbled all the way down into the public dock, accused of various levels of fraud, conspiracy, lying, and other machinations. Take the Bernie Ebbers saga. Hailed not long ago as one of the most brilliant telecommunications entrepreneurs ever, Ebbers engineered a series of corporate takeovers in the 1990s that made WorldCom a multi-billion dollar giant, and he enjoyed the good life of CEO stardom. A darling of Wall Street, he dazzled investment analysts with details of his company's finances and expansion schemes. But alas, WorldCom would soon become the largest corporate bankruptcy in history, and Bernie has gone to trial for orchestrating the $11 billion fraud that sank it. The company's former chief accountant accuses Bernie of ordering him to falsify financial records. But wait, Bernie said as he faced 25 years in prison, not only am I innocent, but I knew absolutely nothing about finances and stuff. Even though he was the top boss, known for demanding all the details about WorldCom affairs, he now professes that he was shocked to learn about that little $11 billion hickey in the books. I couldn't believe it, he said from the witness stand. I never thought anything like that had gone on. He then claimed to be a victim. I put those people in place, he moaned. I trusted them. I just had no earthly idea that anything like that would have occurred. This is Jim Hightower saying, apparently, there's a fine line between being a corporate genius and being clueless.
A message from the American Library Association and Bernie Mac about the hard times facing our nation's libraries.
Hey, I'm Bernie Mac, and libraries need your help. Many are forced to cut back hours, reduce services, and even close their doors. So what can you do? I tell you what, support your local library and help keep your library doors open. Contact your local library to find out how you can make a difference in your community. The future is at your library, so make sure your library has a future. Just a little something from the Mac.
Brought to you by the Campaign for America's Libraries. For more information, visit the American Library Association website at www.ala.org.
Back to radio for the rest of us. Head on.
Welcome back. In conversing with Jim, I mentioned the fact that, you know, the war is 2 years old now. And come this Saturday in Charleston at Davis Square, which is on the corner of Lee and Capitol Streets, long about noon, there will be a commemoration of 2 years of murder and death on the part of the Bush administration. Anyone who believes in peace, I'm sure, is welcome to attend. I'm going to try to take the whole family, my wife and I, this Saturday. I think it's important for them to for my kids to see the democratic process in action. And they've been to meetings of the peace group here in Beckley. And it would be good to have a nice turnout Saturday as well. It's like a nightmare. It's like a nightmare you can't wake up from. This business of murder incorporated running the country. Listening to Carl Mack's bottom of the hour newscast, I've stayed away from this business of the child who was killed from playing with as a result of playing with firearms. I don't know what you can say about that. I honestly don't. It's like you see a story like or hear a story like that, and it's like getting punched in the gut. And there's no answer for it. And what do you say to the parents? What are the parents saying to themselves? Oh my God. And, of course, I'm sure sitting out there somewhere, one of those, I'm a life member of the NRA. Well, Bob, remember, guns don't kill children. Children kill children. I mean, there really are people that think like that. There are probably people out there that think that the answer to the Atlanta problem from last week is more guns in the courthouse. Holy Moses. Can't get my head around it. I mentioned to you, this comes from Information Clearinghouse. I'm going to feel free to read from it at length. a few words from a liberated Iraqi. The liberated Iraqi in question is one Ghazwan al-Mukhtar. The Honorable Mr. George Bush, President of the United States of America, dated March 4th. Dear Mr. Bush, it was regrettable that you were not allowed to see and talk to ordinary Iraqi citizens during your sneak visit to Baghdad on Thanksgiving Day last year. Those Iraqis whom you met during that visit were part of the American installed client state that came on the back of the American tanks. Naturally, they told you what they thought you wanted to hear. Moreover, Mr. President, they lived, like your other advisors in Iraq, in their isolated bubbles in the secured green zone with very little contact with ordinary Iraqis. I am sure that had you talked to ordinary Iraqis, you would have gotten different opinions than those being passed to you by your American or Iraqi advisors. As an ordinary Iraqi citizen, I would like to share my thoughts on the Iraqi dilemma that America has found itself in. More than a year ago, you promised the Iraqi people that, quote, the torture chambers and the secret police are gone forever, unquote. Mr. President, I honestly wanted to believe you then. I discovered later that your American soldiers were torturing the Iraqi people since May 2003. I discovered also that your army generals knew about it and wrote reports to their higher authorities about such abuses of human rights. I will give you, Mr. President, the benefit of the doubt and say that your advisors did not tell you the facts. Having known the facts, you did not apologize for the victims of the American torture, but went ahead putting the blame on only the, quote, seven bad apples, unquote. That did not stop the torture or the human rights violations committed by your troops in Iraq. Reports are still coming to date confirming that torture is being committed against the Iraqis in the American detention camps. I am sure that your advisors will tell you that this is necessary to protect the security of America several thousands of miles away from Iraq. Your partners in the Coalition of the Willing are not doing any better. The British and Danish armies are both torturing Iraqi detainees. Now we discover through human rights reports that the new Iraqi army, created and trained by your government, is also torturing the Iraqis. It is clear to me, Mr. President, that while we were tortured before the liberation by one force of evil, now we are being tortured by at least four evil forces after the liberation. It looks to me, Mr. President, that contrary to your announcement, the torture chambers may truly be here forever. Allow me, Mr. President, that your blaming of only seven bad apples did set the legal precedent for every dictator in the world to escape the responsibility for the torture of human rights and human rights violations. Like you, every dictator will pin the blame on and the responsibility on the seven, 10, or 20 bad apples in his forces. I'm sure that decent American legal scholars would tell you this excuse is very dangerous and would not stand in a proper and impartial court of law. Actions are judged by the results and not rhetoric. Ordinary Iraqis, like your American soldiers, are faced with threats against their lives. The general lawlessness that still exists as a result of your occupation of Iraq makes the life of ordinary Iraqis miserable. We Iraqis are afraid to go out for the fear of being kidnapped by criminal gangs roaming the country with an ineffective police force. We are also afraid of going out for fear that we might be killed by a bomb directed at your troops or killed or shot at by the trigger-happy and nervous American troops. The innocent Iraqi population is not using armored personnel carriers, nor do they use armored cars to help them protect themselves. More innocent Iraqi civilians are killed by your troops shooting at them than those killed by the criminal gangs. You probably know, Mr. President, that your trigger-happy and nervous troops enjoy freedom from prosecution for these unlawful killings. From what I have witnessed, those killers do not even stop to say sorry for their actions. Allow me respectfully to remind you, Mr. President, that now more than 60% of the Iraqi working forces in your liberated Iraq are unemployed, as compared to 30% before your liberation. It looks that your action has doubled the number of Iraqis liberated from earning a decent pay or decent work. The U.S. Congress issued a report on Iraq at the end of June 2004. In that report, they say that in May 2003, just after the invasion, 7 out of the 18 governorates had more than 16 hours of electricity per day. It also says that this number was reduced to 1 governorate in May 2004, 1 year after the invasion. Now we are very lucky if we get 6 hours of electricity per day in Baghdad, a city of 5 million people. Health services have continued to deteriorate during the past 22 months of occupation. Hospitals still lack even the simplest things. Drugs are not available. Fewer patients seek medical treatments or examination because of the security situation and the closed streets. Doctors are not safe at hospitals because they have been physically attacked by relatives of patients blaming or venting their frustration at the poor, helpless doctors. Due to lack of security and poor police force, criminal gangs have kidnapped for ransom a few hundred doctors. Some were threatened. As a result, hundreds of highly qualified doctors have fled the country, and it has resulted in further deterioration of health services. These highly qualified doctors did not run away from the tyranny of the dictator, Mr. President, but because of the chaos and lawlessness in your, quote, liberated Iraq, unquote. Records show, Mr. President, that the Iraqi government smuggled up to 100,000 barrels a day of refined diesel fuel through Turkey with your government's knowledge. These figures indicate that the Iraqi refineries had an excess refining capacity, allowing it to export refined oil products. During the liberation of Iraq, refineries were not targeted like in 1991, so one assumes that the damage was minimal. I wonder why refineries are not fixed yet after 22 months of liberation. I still cannot understand why Iraq continues to import refined oil products from Turkey, Kuwait, and Saudi Arabia, and to my amazement, from Israel. We Iraqis need to know why our money is being spent unwisely to import gasoline now when we were an exporting nation. I might understand that Halliburton and KBR needed to import gasoline for a few months, but not after 22 months of liberation. In 1991, our refineries were severely damaged by the bombing. We, the Iraqi people, were able, despite the sanctions and without the help from the Halliburtons, to fix the refineries in only a few months. We kept them working and going for 13 years, and we were exporting products. Similarly, the Iraqi people were able to restore the electricity in a few months. The Iraqi people reconstructed every building damaged by the war of 1991 in less than a year, seeing the lack of any reconstruction efforts after 22 months of liberation. Makes me sad. For 13 years, Iraqis were living on food rations given by the government. We were told that our government was robbing us and providing us with only 2,200 kcal per day. The liberated government of Iraq, after the liberation, is still providing us with about 2,200 kcal per food per day of food ration. The government of Iraq used to spend about $150 million a month to import and distribute the food rations. According to your CPA Inspector General, $8.8 billion were unaccounted for in 1 year. Mr. President, these $8.8 billion are enough to feed all the people of Iraq for nearly 60 months. This fiscal irresponsibility and the lack of transparency in spending our money make me wonder about the aim of this liberation of Iraq. I'm sorry to say that the Iraqi people are being robbed blind. We are being liberated from our wealth also. I am sure, Mr. President, that our traumatized kids will never forget what was done to their future by your liberation. I am sure that your kids have to deal in future with our traumatized kids. I'm also sure that your kids will have to repay for all the damages and the stolen money. I can see that the price will be very high. I do not want to be like the rest of your advisors giving you the rosy picture. They have told you about the WMD, the Al-Qaeda link, the 9/11 link, the Iraqis welcoming your troops as liberators, and it is proved that they were not telling you the truth. It is about time that you listen to other people. We do not hate America for its freedom or democracy. We don't hate America. We hate the crimes, the destructions, and the devastation committed by America against the innocent people in our country. Respectfully, Ghazwan al-Mukhtar. Now, did that letter make sense to you? It made very good sense to me. Some of those lines, this is the beauty out of the whole thing. The Iraqi people are being robbed blind. We are being liberated from our wealth also. And of course, when there's a member of the Bush family involved, you can count on being liberated from some wealth. I feel real sympathy with Mr. Ghazwan al-Mukhtar. Because very few people now remember that when George Bush crept through the back door of the White House to take office in January 2001. We've almost forgotten that we had a surplus, a huge budget surplus. So Mr. Ghazwan al-Mukhtar, I feel some solidarity with you. We were liberated from our wealth also. And it sucks. It really sucks. Being stolen from is a form of violation. And it's a violation here at home, and it's a violation in Iraq. They have been liberated from their wealth. We have been liberated from ours. And as far as I can tell, a vast majority of America has also been liberated from their conscience. Because if they hadn't been liberated from their conscience, they would care that the Iraqis have been liberated from their wealth. But they don't. They don't even care that we've been liberated from ours. Who played Sam in Casablanca? The flashback scene where the Nazis are marching into Paris and the sommelier has given cases of champagne to Sam and he's pouring champagne for Ilsa and Rick. And he says, "This champagne ought to take the sting out of getting occupied. Henri says he'll water his flowers with it before the Nazis will drink it." I don't think there's enough champagne in all America to take the sting out of what we're doing. And God knows there's not enough champagne. There's not enough water in Iraq to take the sting out of the occupation we've subjected them to. But that's just me. Let's go to the phones. Gary's with us. Hey, Gary, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Hey, guess what happened to me today?
What?
Well, I had to take a trip over to Logan for my employer.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm outside, and I'm loading this great big machine on the back of my truck. And the devil swooped down out of the sky and landed about 100 feet away.
Really?
You know what I'm talking about.
You mean Don?
Yeah.
I was really amazed. Don Coleoni?
Yeah. Yep, he landed right there about 100 feet away from me.
Now, did he have shoes on, or could you see his cloven hooves?
Well, actually, he didn't stay very long at all. I think they run something out to him, to his helicopter real quick, because he was there, I'd say, a minute and a half and was gone.
Well, that's the way it is with the devil.
And my boss, who owns the company I work for, was with me there, and I told him, I says, "You realize he replaced you as the second highest or the first highest paid CEO of West Virginia last year." He told me I was full of beans, but
yeah.
I don't think anybody's making Don's kind of money.
No, that's kind of hard to come by. You know, well, so what? It was the helicopter?
Yeah. It was a big, fancy, nice helicopter. Now, it had to be his, because how many people in Logan County go around it? I mean, it was one of those big, real nice ones.
Yeah, like a Jet Ranger, that kind of thing?
Yeah. I mean, how many people over in Logan got one of those?
Well, I know of one other guy who's got one.
Over there?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, well, maybe it was him.
Well, no, Mark Rucky.
Was he in the coal mining business?
No, he was in the lawyering business.
No. Well, see, I was at a place that sold heavy equipment.
Okay.
So most likely it would be Don then.
Yeah, that had to be Don.
Yeah, I got to see him. I missed getting buzzed there at the rally over at the Marsh Fork, so I guess that was my second opportunity.
Oh, mercy. I don't begrudge a guy a helicopter. I don't begrudge him a 747 if he can afford one. But, you know, I damn sure hate him being able to have one based on what he's doing to, you know, land that he's only going to get to live on for another 20, you know, maybe 30, maybe 40 years tops.
Yeah. Well, you know what gets me is, I'll tell you what, we're going to see the day when West Virginians will probably go cold in their own homes because they've done shipped out and exported everything they had here.
Oh, yeah.
For the quick buck. This is nothing but a bunch of quick buck artists that are taking over the state, and it's been that way for 100 years.
Well, Gary, my son and I took a little drive on Saturday, and we were driving down I-64,
uh-huh,
heading toward the Greenbrier. And what did I see? But the leaves are down, so you can see a little bit more about the forest.
Yeah,
and there's not a big tree out there. I mean, there's not a tree on those hillsides that you can't get your arms around.
Yeah.
What does that tell you?
Well, most of those were probably logged, what, 20, 30 years ago?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though, they really leave a lot of destruction when they come in and do that.
Oh, sure they do. And look at, how much topsoil do you lose in the 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 years that it takes to grow that forest back?
Well, you know what, they keep saying they can't selectively log and things like that. But, you know, you look at the price of lumber nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I just find it hard to believe.
Well, none of the hardwoods. Well, look at what you can buy in the store. You cannot buy a solid piece of hardwood furniture and live in the middle class. Everything's veneered with a 32nd of an inch piece of hardwood on top of a bunch of, you know, garbage wood.
Well, I'll tell you what, I guess you know this, but 90% of your furniture nowadays comes from China.
Oh, I know.
Yeah. I used to haul furniture and out of the factories down in Virginia, North Carolina, and I had one of the managers there tell me, he said, basically what they're using the factories down there for now is warehouses.
Mm-hmm.
They ship it in from China, they warehouse it there, then they ship it out to the various stores. He told me, he says, I can take any piece of furniture that I want, send a sample over there. He says they could make it and send me back all I want. I mean, he just sends them, if he wants a particular table or a china cabinet or whatever, he just sends them a whole complete example of exactly what he wants.
Well, we used to have this phrase we used, Gary, for, like Poland and Czechoslovakia, Hungary, that kind of. We called them client states to the Soviet Union.
Uh-huh.
We are becoming a client state to the People's Republic of China. And I don't mean in terms of necessarily political influence, but what's going to happen if the day comes that we have to start making our own stuff again? Are we going to be able to, or is that going to be knowledge that's lost? Are we going to have to reinvent the wheel?
Well, you know, I've thought about that a lot myself, but you know, look at it this way, Bob: the American people more or less turned over their destinies to the corporations. I mean, we were sold that bill that, you know, life is going to be bigger and better. Go to work here, work 30 years, get a gold watch, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that worked for a generation. But then after that, they found out that they could make a lot more money by, operating the way they do nowadays, which is making everything overseas, using, cheap labor and shipping it back over here to drain what little capital we got left out of us. You know what I'm saying?
And if you stop and do the math on that, we know that they work for slave labor wages in China.
Uh-huh.
But you've still got freight costs, man. I mean, and they're not flying it from China. It's coming across on a really big ship.
Yeah.
You know, these container ships that dock in L.A.
Uh-huh.
Factor all of that in, and then just get a gander at the cost of it, and then, go and look and try to figure out who's getting rich.
Well, the middlemen are getting rich. I'll tell you where this all started. I mean, maybe you remember this. You remember this guy, Mellinger, that was trying to get everybody in the mail order like 30 years ago?
Yeah.
Well, that's what he was doing back then. He would go overseas and buy this stuff up for pennies on the dollar and bring it over here. And eventually some of these corporations, they wised up to it. And they said, well, we could do that too. And that's what really got it all started.
Well, that may be the case. But I tell you what, I know that, what was the old website? NoSweatShop.com.
Uh-huh.
You could go there and spend and buy, and it's union made. And it is, I think there might even still be a link to it on my site. It's union-made clothing, polo shirts, things like that, made in America by union workers who have a stake in their company, 100% cotton polo shirt, nice stuff, $14-$15.
Which is a reasonable price for a good shirt.
And the stuff that's coming from Indonesia is $25.
Well, that's because, instead of the workers getting any kind of living wage, the big shots are putting that money in their pocket.
Sure they are.
I mean, we've got this class of people that are growing out there that are extraordinarily wealthy. And we're becoming a two-tier society. It's going to be real rich and real poor.
Yeah, feudalism.
And it's been planned out that way.
I think it probably has. Gary, we've got to roll, man.
Okay, Bob.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Let's see. News, and please don't run away if you're on hold. Stick with us. We'll come back. We'll go right back to the phones out of the news. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head On.
WWNR Beckley. Proud of over 50 years of broadcasting history.
You can depend on us.
News Talk 620. WWNR Beckley. It's 9 o'clock.
Radio for the real majority. Head On.
Welcome back. 5 minutes after 9 o'clock. I'm Bob. Phone number is 252-6200. Outside Beckley, it's 800-620-9967. there's nothing more to say about it with the gun store. Been going all day here in the news and doesn't get any better. Please, please, if you have firearms in your home and children in your home, secure the firearms. Please. Let's go back to the phones. David is with us. Hey, David, you're head on. David.
Hello, Bob.
Hey.
Oh, before we do anything more to light in nature, let's make sure I for one want to reinforce gun safety, gun protection, and the idea that, what was the oldest one, 15?
16.
Something like that?
Yeah.
Ooh. With that many younger kids in the house, them alone, that's a little chancy. I don't...
Lock them up.
You got it.
I don't mean the kid. I mean the guns.
No, I know. And you're exactly right. Because gun training, gun safety, teaching everything you can, kids will be kids. And all it takes is one slip, one live round, and we now know exactly what the outcome is.
Yeah, well,
or can be.
Kids are kids by definition, kids are kids because, you know, this is their time to make mistakes and learn.
But you shouldn't do it with live rounds.
No. It's just, there's not so much. It was a shotgun, you know, it was the hunting gun. It was a 20-gauge shotgun.
Oh, I know. And let's leave that one alone. But,
please,
a slightly different gun item. It horrified me when I realized that there were weapons inside that Georgia courthouse.
Oh.
It is just, don't I remember correctly that sidearms are just absolutely unheard of within prisons where arms length contact is available?
Yes, you are correct.
For a reason.
For a very good reason.
Well established by hundreds of years of exposure. But for whatever group of reasons, whether it's cowboy macho attitude or, well, if we buy a $200 sidearm, we can save a $30,000 a year officer. We don't have to send two, just one with a gun. That'll do it. Oh, that is...
Justice on the cheap. Yeah, you're right. Never thought about it that way, David.
It's either that macho thing about we're going to have them armed in here so that if anything comes in from the outside, we can kill the intruder. Foolishness. Guard the outside. The inside of the Hall of Justice should be sacred and devoid of that sort of thing.
I tend to subscribe to the same idea. And again, remember, these guns were there to deal with an otherwise unarmed populace.
Exactly, because...
It's for shooting the unarmed people.
In what brief contact I've had with courthouses in the last 2 or 3 years, you can't even go in with a nail file.
Mm-mm. No, you're right. Your little terrorist brand nail clippers. Yeah, sorry.
Exactly. Well, on a lighter note.
Okay.
Dooley Wilson. Played Sam.
Yes, that's right. I knew somebody'd know that. Dooley Wilson.
I thought you'd enjoy
it. He says he'll water his garden before he'll let the Nazis have it.
And I'm sorry, but in all of the professional acting moments I've seen on film, there was no greater portrayal of empathy and pathos when Sam looked around at Rick and said, no, you don't want me to play that.
Right. Play it, Sam.
If she can take it, I can. And he, Sam, looked absolutely
stricken. Yeah.
It was breaking his heart. But the boss had said play the song.
Well, you know what? Nothing. I'm sorry, but I don't think anything's taken the sting out of getting occupied in Iraq. Yeah.
There's precious. The only upside to that is going to be leaving.
Yeah, declaring victory and leaving with our tail between our legs. Because you know, Iran's next.
Short of the nuclear option, which I don't think is off the table, he's already told us all options are open.
Right.
So, Mr. President, drop the big one.
Well, and again, we've got this, what was it, a week and a half ago or so, this freak congressman from Texas, this Republican, who suggested to George that he drop a nuclear weapon on Syria? Yes, he did. He did. He really did.
Well, I don't doubt that for a second, because there's still guys out there that are disappointed that we haven't bombed anybody into the Stone Age completely. I mean, we've gotten them, you know, headed down that path, but...
I've had people in the past, David, on this show tell me that, you know, the real problem with Vietnam is we didn't use no nuclear weapons. I can't... Who are these people, David?
They're not Americans as I view what an American is.
And I don't know who it was, but I heard someone earlier today talking about, you know, the judge that got murdered last week.
Right.
He was a liberal judge. He's a liberal. As if the
one in Georgia?
Yeah. As if somehow one that excused it. You know, wow.
He was a liberal judge.
Yeah.
Well, that fella about to be tried for rape and false imprisonment and all the things that went with capturing a girlfriend for 3, 4, 5 days, that fella was fearful enough of facing that judge that he killed him.
Yeah.
So, I don't think that's a very liberal judge.
Well, and one of the interesting things about that guy, the first jury that heard his case, David, you know, the one that it was a hung jury, they couldn't come to a conclusion.
Right.
They were so disgusted with the police and the prosecution that some of them were on the verge of writing letters to how dare you bring such a bogus case to the court.
That is the thing, and I'm glad you said that. It's quite a drift from what we were talking about earlier, but that is the thing about sloppy police work that makes me so disgusted with so much of what is modern police work. We hear about these trumped-up cases in Texas where people are literally, in America this time, tortured or beaten into confessing the things they didn't do, or they find out there's horrible instances of bad police work followed by strong-arm tactics in Chicago or wherever else.
And then even worse lawyer work. I mean, people, David, in Texas, people have literally gone to the death chamber having been tried and convicted, and during the trial, their appointed lawyer was sound asleep.
And Texas appeals courts have said in writing that even though the evidence would clear the individual when presented, if presented to them, that they didn't feel they wanted to be bothered. Texas appeals courts have acknowledged that evidence that would save a man was denied because it would lengthen the process and be an aggravation and a detriment to efficient use of the courts. Texas is a nightmare. And that boob came out of that environment and wants it for all of America.
Yeah, and that boob's lawyer was Alberto Gonzalez, who, you know, made fun of people whose lives were literally in the balance and hours away from ending. And we know that the reports that he wrote were backward justifications. You know, this guy should die because he is guilty, therefore he did it. That's the way Alberto Gonzalez wrote his memos to George, which George didn't even read them, David. He just looked up and said, well, is he guilty? Kill him. You know, how many hundreds of thousands of people have we liberated to death in Iraq? Yeah. Are they Iraqis?
That should kill be a bumper him. Sticker, liberated to death.
Thank you. I come up with one of those every now and then.
Well, you just did.
Oh, but by the way, if you have any yen to see it, the letter from the liberated Iraqi is the Information Clearinghouse.
Well, I was listening straight through, and I, you know, it was infuriating and enlightening, and had me walking around the room screaming at the computer. It's so perfect and it's so well put together. And nobody's listening, and that's the scariest part. You've said it, I've said it, all the callers that are rational have said it. All of the things that call BS on things that should be referred, should be brought down,
mm-hmm.
those mechanisms aren't in place. You talked about the war in Vietnam being the war in our living room. So many of those mechanisms have been taken away, and I've heard callers say, well, you know, it will eventually catch up to them. The Republicans, the corporatists, this horrible convergence of these ugly people are taking away the mechanisms that have always allowed America to right the ship.
Yeah.
The mechanisms that have been there for us, an educated populace faced with good information from honest, prying, aggravating journalists, and I use aggravating in the most affirmative sort of way.
Right.
That's being taken away on purpose.
Right. We had the war in our living room, David, and most of America still didn't protest.
You know, it took much too long.
Right. And we're seeing signs the second month in a row that the Marines can't meet their recruiting goal. The Army is, what, 27% down on their recruiting goals? Because suddenly the people that we have relied upon for this so-called all-volunteer military, you know, the poor, the downtrodden, the people without any other hope, whether it be poor white folk, poor Latino folk, or poor black folk, they're looking up and going, yeah, they're talking about sending me to Germany, but, hey, you know, mama didn't raise no dummy, and I know where I'm going if I sign on the dotted line.
Well, to many of those kids, suddenly flipping burgers at McDonald's doesn't look so bad now because it's very unlikely that the vehicle you're riding in will be blown up underneath you
or that
going to work at McDonald's.
Or that anybody will shoot at you for leaving the lettuce off.
Precisely.
Oh, what a world. What a world.
What a world.
David,
oh,
thanks
well,
so much.
My clock says break time.
Yeah, it is. Thanks, man. Later.
Talk to you later.
Bye. Okay, yeah, a little break, then we'll come back. Lots more fun to have. This is News Talk 620 WWNR. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Love sample day at the grocery store? You get to nibble on a whole variety of things without committing to something that may not agree with your taste buds. Apply that same idea to the world of romance and you find yourself at Cupid.com, the place where you can meet hundreds of guys in your own hometown through our website or at one of our fun local events. Basic memberships are free with zero obligations. You can even reply to messages from Gold members, a service you usually pay for at other sites. Most online dating services build worldwide networks of strangers thousands of miles apart, but Cupid.com concentrates on bringing people together who have things in common, including an area code. And since the people that use Cupid.com are looking for true love, one match is all it takes to find your soulmate. Tired of the bitter taste of just another date? Sample your true love at Cupid.com, online or at a local event. Cupid.com.
Cupid.com. Advertising locally on great radio stations to bring people together for love.
Celebrate the risen Lord this Easter Sunday, March 27th, at the First Baptist Church of Beckley. Enjoy a free concert featuring Kim and Brian Tabor at the 10:45 a.m. service. The public is welcome and invited to attend. Easter Sunday, March 27th, at the First Baptist Church of Beckley.
A guy who's in no rush to be savage, Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back to live radio. The only live talk radio originating in West Virginia for your nighttime enjoyment. Oh, we say, you know, what's happening to this country? How do we let this stuff go on? This is not to say that people aren't trying to open people's eyes. What was the joke last Friday night about the puppies that went from being Republican puppies to Democrat puppies because they opened their eyes? Jimmy Massey, young man, spent 12 years in the Marine Corps, including a two-month stint in Iraq. Young man, full-grown man. Last Tuesday at Siena College, he talked about his transformation from a gung-ho staff sergeant to an anti-war activist. He was a Marine recruiter and a boot camp drill instructor before he went to war, and he recalled that he always had misgivings about the military, especially the way recruits were dehumanized in basic training. But it was a red Kia at a Baghdad checkpoint in 2003 that caused a real change of heart. Here's what he said. We discharged our weapons into the Kia. There were four occupants in the vehicle. Three were severely wounded and expiring fast. The driver was unscathed. While we were trying to medevac these individuals out, this young man that was unscathed came up to me and asked, why did you do this? Why did you kill my brother? We're not terrorists. He said his commanders sometimes encouraged him to fire almost indiscriminately. They were painting a picture that every civilian in Iraq, listen carefully, those of you who support the war, they were painting a picture that every civilian in Iraq was a potential terrorist, regardless of age or sex. This was an event, again, at Siena College. And toward the end, he had this message for those in ROTC. I don't want to see you go. I've seen it. It'll destroy you emotionally and physically. He says, we have a problem in the United States right now where we're forcing young men and women to go into the military because of the lack of funds to continue with higher education or simple lack of peer support from outside sources. After the incident with the Kia, Massey said he told his commanding officer that the war amounted to little more than genocide. He sought legal counsel and soon received a medical discharge. He said he now suffers from post-traumatic stress syndrome. Now listen, this is a guy who was there, okay? This isn't me prattling on and making comparisons, yada, 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 yada. No, this is a guy who was there. Massey, who also spoke Tuesday night at Bethlehem Town Hall, helped found Iraq Veterans Against the War and made international headlines in December when he testified on behalf of Army deserter Jeremy Hinsman at a refugee hearing in Canada. At Siena, he let loose with incendiary rhetoric, even equating the U.S. Well, here's what he said. This is a guy who was there. This is a guy who deliberately killed people. This is a guy who deliberately killed civilians because those were his orders. Abu Ghraib, Auschwitz, what's the difference? Hear it again, war supporters. This is one of those boots on the ground you're so fond of. Abu Ghraib, Auschwitz, what's the difference? Abu Ghraib, Auschwitz, what's the difference? He was criticized after his remarks by students who have never been there, who weren't involved in it, who objected to his attitude. And the way the report's written, and his refusal to view the war as a legitimate response to a brutal despot. We didn't go over there because he was a brutal despot. Do you not remember that? We went over there because Saddam was going to get in a rubber seahorse raft and row to America with his brand spanking new atomic weapon. Remember? The grave and gathering imminent threat? And, you know, this is not an isolated incident this Jimmy Massey went through. You know, he still talks, listen to the quotes, he still talks like a soldier. We discharged our weapons into the Kia. There were four occupants in the vehicle. Three were severely wounded and expiring fast. That's military mumbo-jumbo if I've ever heard it. They weren't expiring, they were dying. The weapons weren't discharged, the weapons were fired. But you see, in the cleaned-up jingo, in the sterile mumbo-jumbo of corporatist war, weapons are no longer fired, guns are no longer shot. They are discharged. Okay?
they're discharged. There were four occupants in the vehicle. No, there weren't. There were four human beings in the vehicle. But they're taught to refer to them as occupants. Because if you start talking about them like people, it becomes just a little bit hellish and a little more of a nightmare. Three were severely wounded and expiring fast. Dying! Dying. Because the weapons weren't discharged. Do you understand how the language plays a part in the corporatization of this country? At one point at the beginning of the war, I remember reading that that body bags had been replaced by transfer tubes. Transfer tubes. Hell, that sounds like something that happens in the subway. The language is important. And listen to what he says. You know, this is a guy who grew some morals, who grew a conscience. We have a problem in the United States right now where we're forcing young men and women to go into the military because of the lack of funds to continue with higher education. Do you wonder why the loan program's being cut, sunshine? Do you wonder why the grants are going down? No grants, no loans, no college. No college, no future. No future, what the hell? Might as well go die for George. Makes sense, doesn't it? More sense than you care to admit. Abu Ghraib, Auschwitz, what's the difference? Well, so far, as far as we can tell, the only difference is mathematical. Haven't quite worked the numbers up yet. Let's see, the death camp started, what, about 1938? Took 7 years, 6 million in the death camps. Well, you know, Georgia's done way over 100,000 civilians in just under 2 years. He's still got a chance to catch up. And knowing what a fierce competitor he is, you know, hey, you know what happens if he drops a nuke on something? Because remember, like David said, all options are on the table. And that vicious murdering clown that so many of you voted for is the one who said that. You ready to nuke somebody? I know the wingnuts are. I mean, it's my misfortune that I listened to the Savage Wiener some on the way home. He's ready to nuke people. That congressman from Texas is ready to nuke people. How about you, the decent, upstanding, church-going, not really Republicans after all, West Virginians? Are you ready to nuke somebody? Are you? You ready to tote that one around on your conscience? Because, you know, when he does, it'll be done in your name. Better get all Mission Impossible all quick and disavow any knowledge of the actions of the madman at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Because some way or another, someday, you will be called to account. Either because of your religious beliefs and what you think's going to happen after you die, maybe when some veteran's parent looks at you and says, why couldn't you have opposed this war before they killed my baby? Ability, come on. It's what you Republicans are about, remember? Personal responsibility. That's you guys' gig. Time for a break. The phone number is 252-6200 outside Beckley. It's 800-620-9967. This is Head On. I'm Bob.
Good evening, this is Carl Mack, WWNR News, an advocate for female reproductive rights in West Virginia. Says there's ground-level support for a bill that would mandate insurance coverage of birth control. The bill is currently waiting to be taken up in the Senate Banking and Insurance Committee.
Margaret Chapman, executive director of West Virginia Free, says she expects at least some movement on the legislation this season. Chapman says it's a question of prescription fairness. She says contraceptives are part of basic health care, and she also says this bill would mandate increased health insurance coverage of prescription birth control. West Virginia's Secretary of State has a plan when it comes to helping people vote. Betty Ireland will detail that plan later this evening. The goal is to bring West Virginia into full compliance with the Help America Vote Act by the 2006 primary election. A long-standing eyesore in downtown Beckley could be coming down soon. The Raleigh County Board of Education and Beckley Common Council are taking steps to tear down the old Raleigh County Vocational Technical School on 2nd Street. The building is school board property, but the board has been unable until now to get help from the city in tearing it down because there was no demolition landfill to dispose of the building's remains. And West Virginia is one of only two states that penalizes the unemployed for receiving Social Security benefits, and that's because the fund that covers unemployed workers pays out more in benefits each month than it receives from employers in premiums. Unless that changes, officials expect the fund to run out of money between the year 2008 and 2010. For the rest of this evening, just partly cloudy. Tonight will be partly cloudy to mostly clear and chilly with a low near 25. But then tomorrow, just like today was, partly sunny, a little bit warmer tomorrow with temperatures in the mid to upper 40s. For News Talk 620, this is Carl Mack, when you need to know.
WWNR Beckley.
Apple's newest iPods offer both more and less. I'll explain next on Tech Tips 101.
Treat a headache the way I used to? Why would I? I tried Advil Liquid Gels. Advil Liquid Gels are liquid fast, filled with real liquid. Plus, get this, Advil Liquid Gels rush liquid relief right to my throbbing headache. And only Advil has liquid gels. No other brand has that. You hear me? No one. That's why for pain, I know. All I need is my Advil liquid gels. Liquid fast, headache relief.
Apple Computer announced its latest iPod like it did the flat-screen version of its iMac computer on the cover of a national news magazine. But seeing the iPod in Newsweek is nothing like holding it in person. The fourth-generation device, which is both Windows and Mac compatible, looks familiar. It's bright white with a nice bright but still monochrome LCD display. The new iPod is about 1 millimeter slimmer than its third-generation predecessor and offers a button-laden scroll wheel similar to the iPod Mini. While the maximum storage capacity remains at 40 gigabytes, the new iPod promises 12 hours of battery life, a 50% improvement and a welcome one for music fans who want to play more than the 8 hours of tunes allowed by the batteries of earlier iPods. Best of all, it comes with a lower price. The 40-gig model will cost you $399, the 20-gig model just $299, a $100 price drop for each. For Tech Tips 101, I'm Bob Bicknell.
Still taking Claritin? Join the millions of allergy sufferers who've discovered non-drowsy Allivert. Quick-dissolving Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. Wow, that's fast. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, wherever you are. Try non-drowsy 24-hour relief, even Claritin can't beat, without a prescription. Quick-dissolving Allivert. Allergy medicine right when you need it, wherever you are.
Most of the time, the pain experienced by severe burn patients while they are healing is adequately controlled by medication, but during wound care, the majority of patients report being in excruciating pain. Speaking at a symposium sponsored by the National Institute on Drug Abuse, Dr. Hunter Hoffman of the University of Washington in Seattle says virtual reality distraction may be one way to further reduce the pain. He adds that the more realistic the virtual reality world, the greater the benefit.
We did an experiment where we had one virtual world that was as good as we could get it, and we had another virtual world that was as bad as we could get it. High-tech VR was much more effective, significantly more effective than low-tech VR for reducing pain, and there was a correlation between how much presence people reported and how much pain reduction.
Dr. Hoffman says preliminary results from brain scans of patients undergoing MRIs also show dramatic reduction in pain-related brain activity during virtual reality. This is Calvin Jackson, the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland.
You can be right and be wrong, or be left and be right. Head on with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. It's about 23 minutes before 10 o'clock. That much time left in tonight's version of Head On. The beginning of another week. I love Mondays. I guess I'm just one of those contrary people. I like Mondays, and Fridays, kind of, A couple of interesting emails here. You know, I mention it, and you guys go out and send it in. Thanks so much. I mentioned earlier the fact that Congressman Mollahan from the 1st District is throwing a monkey wrench into the Republican works in the Ethics Committee. And this is the gist of it. An article from the L.A. Times. Just as new controversy has erupted over trips taken by congressional Democrats and Republicans, including House Majority Leader Tom DeLay, our dirtbag, the workings of the chamber's ethics committee have been brought to a halt. The House Republicans, you see, and just tell me if you think this is fair, or think about it and mull on it. Ponder these things in your heart, as it were. The Republicans have written the new rules for the House Ethics Committee. Not the Republicans and the Democrats, because only the Republicans matter, because apparently they're the only ones with ethical troubles. But what's going on is the new rules written by the Republicans gut the ability of the Ethics Committee to even investigate a claim of unethical behavior, which, of course, was the goal to begin with. Alan Mollahan has, you know, he's got a reputation for working with people and trying to get some things done, you know, do the right thing. He's a bipartisan kind of guy. But Alan Mollahan stood up and said, no, enough. What he said last Friday was that the Republicans had left him no choice but to thwart the committee's operations. And what he said about these so-called ethical rules, this rewrite, how bad does someone's conduct have to be when you have to completely redo the ethical structure for one guy, to wit, Dr. Bug Spray DeLay. The rules, each of them separately and together, seriously undermine the ability of the Ethics Committee to do its job. That's what Alan Mollahan said. The rules are seriously flawed and extremely mischievous to the ability of the Ethics Committee to efficiently and responsibly discharge its duties. Now, people who are interested in congressional ethics, although there's another group that thinks it might be, at least where the Republicans are concerned, a contradiction in terms, they think Mollahan's doing the right thing. I think Mollahan's doing the right thing. Anybody who thinks that Congress should, you know, the House of Representatives should, well, sort of pretend at playing by the rules, generally thinks Alan Mollahan's doing a good thing. But now listen to what the Republicans say. The Democrats have chosen to shut down the Ethics Committee, said Ron Bongean, press secretary for House Speaker J. Dennis Hastert. The only way to get around this impasse is for the Democrats to put the ethics process above partisan politics. What? Partisan politics is what got us these noxious rules. What it boils down to, as was mentioned earlier in the show, DeLay took a trip that was paid for by the Korea-U.S. Exchange Council. That group is registered under the Foreign Agents Registration Act. And House rules forbid members from accepting gifts from organizations registered as foreign agents. DeLay? What a DeLay to right on the plane. I'm going to Korea. I'm going to eat me some kimchi. Ugh. Meanwhile, a recent report in the National Journal probed a DeLay trip to Scotland that the majority leader said was financed by the National Center for Public Policy Research, a conservative think tank. It raised questions, the article did, about whether Jack Abramoff, who is a lobbyist, an influence peddler of high order, he might have paid for part of the trip. But see, under the rules that the House Republicans on the Ethics Committee crafted, under those rules, none of this matters.
Can't even investigate it. Can't even investigate it. So to prevent those rules from going into effect, Congressman Wallahan is saying, no more, sorry. We're gonna shut business down until we've got something that really, really looks like a committee that cares about whether the rules are followed. What did he say? Alan Mollahan said, if you aren't going to create an ethics committee right, don't create it at all. Otherwise, it is a great farce on the body, not to mention the American people. Yeah, not to mention the American people. Now, what did Mark Twain say, oh, those many, many years ago? Assume for a moment you're a Republican congressman. Also assume that you're an idiot. But I repeat myself. Bless his heart. Mark Twain knew what it was like to deal with a bunch of good-for-nothing Republicans holding Congress, too. Simple truth is that the Republican leadership resented the committee's carefully reasoned decision last year to admonish one of its own and has resolved to ensure it never happens again, even as news reports raise additional ethical issues. That was Steny Hoyer, Democrat, Maryland, the House Minority Whip. Because, you see, the Ethics Committee, do you remember that? Do you remember the Ethics Committee admonished... Bad, Congressman. Bad. You can hear how hard I'm slapping my wrist. It's really hurting. Ow! Oh, stop. Bad, Congressman. Bad, Congressman DeLay. Consider yourself admonished. And they did it, what, two or three times? So, Tom DeLay, good, upstanding Christian that he is, didn't like being admonished for being a stinking crook. So they purged the committee of... its Republican chair, put in one of Dennis Hastert's little toads, and crafted a bunch of rules to make sure that no one would ever have to hear about Tom DeLay being told, bad monkey, Congressman, bad monkey. Make sure that never, ever happened again. And bless his heart, Alan Mollahan is doing the right thing. Remember those words, they kind of make sense. If you aren't going to create an ethics committee, right, don't create it at all. Just do away with it and tell the Republican congressman that they can take all the dirty money that they want from any place that they want. Got a bankruptcy bill going through? How about some donor dollars from the credit card companies? We'll be considering that bankruptcy legislation pretty soon. You want to make sure we do a thorough job of it. Come on, guys, pony it up. That's what the Republicans in the House want. That's what Shelley Moore wants. Because, of course, Shelley Moore is the second biggest recipient of the dirty money that Tom DeLay raises. Who's surprised? That's Arch's daughter. If there's any graft to be had, she'll find it. Hell, she can't help it. It's genetic. So many thanks to Judy for sending along that article. And this also, you got to hear this. This is just brilliant stuff. This is from our buddy Vernon. He says at last year's Friends of Coal Day that 1,800 people donated 1,800 pounds of food to the Mountaineer Food Bank in Gassaway. Laudable. I praise the effort. But he says he has a challenge for the Fiends of Coal, or Friends of Coal, this year. He says, donate 1 ounce of food. Now, do the math. Donate 1 ounce of food for each pound of explosives that the Fiends use in one day's mountain range removal blasting. Now, Vernon anticipates those same 1,800 people will show up at Fiends of Coal Day. But if they do, each one of them will have to bring 100 pounds of food. 1 ounce for every pound of explosive used in one day of mountain range removal blasting in West Virginia. 1 ounce. And at that rate, they will have to bring 100 pounds of food each. 180,000 pounds of food they will have to bring. Because mountain range removers like, Don Colleoni Blankenstein and the cretins who work for him use 3 million pounds of explosives per day. Of course, if you're a regular listener to this show, you know that. If you're not, you don't know that. It's news to you. But Vernon, not satisfied. God bless him. Not satisfied with that challenge. He's got another one. Maybe this one's a little bit easier. He wants the fiends, or rather friends of coal, to donate a pound of food for each mining job lost since 1980 due to mountain range removal. Again, those 1,800 who showed up last year, assuming they show up this year, they've in this case, they've only got to bring, 23 pounds of food. Because since 1980, this industry that keeps the lights on in West Virginia and you know, has so many people directly employed and indirectly affected by mining, blah, 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 lie, 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 lie. 41,000 mining jobs have been lost in West Virginia, about 74% since 1980. 25 years, 41,000 jobs. And what Vernon says is so true. What they do for the state is nothing compared to what they do to the state. So when you hear the propaganda and you see the pretty commercials, yeah, I mean, they're running, they are running scared because they're not going to spend money on commercials unless they're afraid. And they are. They're scared. Because, among other things, they know about the poll that happened last year. They know that well over 50% of West Virginians not only disagree with, but deplore what the Masseys are doing to our mountains. Most West Virginians despise it. So they've got to run these commercials. And they tell you, well, about all the jobs associated, directly associated with coal mining in West Virginia. And they'll never tell you about the one that's most closely associated. You saw the newspaper and you saw the picture of that coal truck wreck. Funeral homes are directly kept in business by the coal industry. What it did to that vehicle. But of course, it's not worth a little phone call to your legislator to make sure that, you know, they at least pay attention to what's going on. Coal, it keeps the lights on in West Virginia funeral homes. Coal, directly responsible for the employment of 100 undertakers all around West Virginia. Coal, it's good for the EMS. You see that photograph? Everyone said it so well. What they do for the state is nothing compared with what they do. And yet we can't come up with enough breaks, enough sweetheart deals for the coal industry. It amazes me. Yeah, 3 million pounds of explosives every day in West Virginia. It takes a lot of explosives to bring down what God took billions of years to raise up. A friend of mine was telling me the other day that, and he does some rock climbing in the gorge. He said at the top, you know, the top levels of the rock in the New River Gorge, he has seen, and some of you know what these are. Many of you know what these are. I've got one of the smartest talk radio audiences that is. At the very top, boy, I tell you, see, I talk with my hands. It's talk radio. I just knocked a microphone over. No, at the very top of the gorge, the very top layer of rock, you can see little creatures called trilobites, prehistoric creatures, ancient, multi-millions of years old creatures. And those trilobites were underwater creatures. And yet there they are, fossilized into the rock at the top of the gorge. Telling my son about it, and I asked him what it meant. And he said, it means that was underwater once, right, Dad? Yep. So in the millions and millions and billions of years that it took Almighty God to raise these mountains up, it takes Don Blankenship 3 million pounds of explosives per day to lay low, to ruin, to flatten, to destroy, to separate from their aluminum and their manganese and their mercury and run it into the streams and the air for your grandchildren to drink and your great-grandchildren to breathe. Comforting, isn't it? Not for me. But it goes on every day. And as long as it's not in my backyard, eh, who cares, right? Who cares? Who is going to protest, do you suppose? Who is going to protest when it is in your backyard? I've referenced Pastor Martin Niemöller a couple of times. When they, you know, when they came for the Catholics, I said nothing because I wasn't a Catholic. When they came for the trade unionists, I said nothing because I wasn't a trade unionist. When they came for the communists, I said nothing because I wasn't a communist. When they came for the social democrats, I said nothing because I wasn't a social democrat. When they came for the Jews, I said nothing because I wasn't a Jew. When they came for me, there was no one to say anything because they had all been taken away. And he was writing from his perspective of having lived through the Third Reich. But you know what? You don't have to be German, and you don't have to be dealing with the Nazis for that to matter. It's the same thing with mountain range removal. It's the same thing with the destruction of this beautiful, beautiful, beautiful state that has been raped for over 100 years now, bleeding on the ground. The same thing. They're doing it in one corner of the state, and you say nothing. They do it in another corner of the state, you say nothing. What? Who within the sound of my voice will say something now before they come for your little corner of heaven, your little chunk of paradise? You get it? I mean, I know for a fact that the house where I live, I think our well's about 72 feet deep, and it has the most beautiful crystal clear water in it. It used to be that when you, and we had, you know, we had a hand, you know, the drop thingy that you drop down the well, the rope would travel about 35, 40 feet before it hit water. Now it travels almost the entire distance, depth of the well. What's the difference? Oh, 15, 20 years ago, some greedy coal company decided that they wanted to blast the snot out of the mountains that took God Almighty billions of years to raise up along the gully. Yeah. So what, you know, like I said, I know from experience, what will you do when they come for your little corner of paradise? Who will speak up for you after you have stood so long silent? And I don't care whether it's mountain range removal, or the war in Iraq, or poison in our water and in our air, or ripping off our children so that it'll be a little easier to sucker them into the military. When will you speak out? Now? Tomorrow? Sometime? Or will you suddenly find your voice when your voice can no longer be heard? I don't know. It's time to go home. The show tonight, of course, was produced by the lovely and talented Taylor Sky, engineered by Randy Kerbway, announced at least in part by Brian Reznor, and brought to you as ever by the 20,000 workers of the Affiliated Construction Trades Foundation. If you're working in West Virginia, indeed they are working for you. Also brought to you by our very good friends at the West Virginia Pipe Trades. The show is archived every night by Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. We are very, very grateful to him for it. Go out, have a look around. He's got a great site. Lots of great programming to listen to in addition to this one. Hey, Agnes.